Atlas Butler has convenient 2-hour service windows for heating, cooling, and plumbing service. Because nobody likes waiting around. You listening, BMB? Nobody likes waiting around.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Good morning, I'm Eric Reeser. The Cleveland Guardians held steady over the last 30 games without 7-time All-Star Jose Ramirez. J-Ram missed 5 weeks with a broken left hand, and Cleveland went 15-15 in his absence. Ramirez had a pair of hits last night, drove in a pair of runs, but the Guardians fell to the Twins 10-6. Cleveland can take the 4-game series with a win at Progressive today at 140. Guardians trail the White Sox by a game for the top spot in the AL Central. As for the Reds, Cincinnati made it 2 in a row with a 5-3 win over the Mariners last night in Seattle. Sal Stewart's 3-run shot in the 7th was the difference. Reds are off Thursday. Cincinnati's in St. Louis Friday. And in college football, 5-star running back David Gabriel George picked Tennessee over Ohio State. George is the second highest ranked rusher in the class of 2027. This update is sponsored by Germain Toyota for unbeatable service and sales. Visit Germain Toyota on the corner of I-70 and Bryce Road, or you can visit them online at germaintoyota.net.
Your morning just got more interesting. Distilled and barrel-picked for your listening pleasure. Bo Bishop, a local sports media legend. What William T. Sherman was to the Union Army, he is to Northern College football. A husband, a father, and middling youth sports coach. He's friends with Central Ohio sporting royalty.
I'm talking to Ohio State Athletic Director Ross Bjorken. Coach Day walking on with us right now. Good to see you, buddy.
Good buddy, Austin Ward.
My good buddy, Tim May, the Tim May Show.
The great Doug Lamery is joining us.
Hi, everybody. Dom Tabari here.
Oh, Reese came in, and he's handed me papers.
Yeah,
and then
it's a rundown.
And then he said, you see that button? That's the only button you need to worry about. Don't touch. There's 8,000 buttons in front of me. Oh, I didn't know what he was talking about.
The one that says on.
We blew the budget on this imaging, and only two guys answered our ad on Craigslist. Ryan Baker and Eric Reeser. Act accordingly. You're now listening to Bishop and Friends.
Bishop and Friends is sponsored by Diamond Seller, your true jeweler for over 75 years.
You know, I had in that award-eligible update Ole Miss, along with Tennessee, Ohio State, in the running for 5-star running back David Gabriel George. But I realized that the odds for Ole Miss actually landing DGG were about as high as Joshua supporting his son if he wants to play U37 football. Maybe even higher for Joshua supporting his son and playing beer league football. But I figured, scrap the Rebels. Just stick with the Buckeyes and the Volunteers. Obviously, went the way of the Volunteers, who get their first 5-star in the class. My yearly, and I feel like it's becoming bi-monthly almost, Joshua, reminder to don't tweet at high schoolers. Don't tweet at college kids. Don't send them messages on social media. David Gabriel George picked Tennessee, and we all know the reasons why.
So I think in this day and age, fewer fans are sending the tweet to the recruit that is like, oh, you know, I hope you have a terrible career or whatever it is, like the nasty tweet. The tweet they're sending now is, hey, when things don't work out in a couple years,
I didn't see a lot of that.
Circle back in the portal. We'd still love to have you around here. So if there's one positive from this world that we're in right now, is I think the fans understand that not burning the bridge, coming in second place in this world, not the worst case scenario, because you still might get the guy.
I mean, you mentioned Ole Miss, Quinshon Judkins, right? Starts his career in Oxford, Mississippi, and he ends up at Ohio State winning a national championship.
How about Caleb Downs?
Right? You talked about the talent that Kalen DeBoer was thinking he might be coaching, and so many Alabama guys now playing in Columbus. So not all is lost. At least we don't know. It's a 3-year contract. $3 million a year. What's the reported value for DGG at Tennessee? He's a Tennessee guy. You know, there was a lot of talk in his recruitment process that he wanted his family at every single game. He had his family with him at the announcement last night. Reportedly, a Tennessee booster made that happen. The Volunteers have reportedly put it together where his family's going to join him on the road for games. I get all that.
Yeah.
Makes total sense. Okay with Ohio State not going in that direction.
Listen, man. The more I got to thinking about this last night after it happened, obviously Tennessee has been a program that at the top end, you're like, you know, they could be in the college football playoff. I don't think any of us are saying that they're going to win a title, but it's not pure disaster if they're clicking. But last year, what were they? 8-5, 8-4 regular season. they didn't beat a team with a winning record in FBS. Who knows what happens? Like, if they have a bad year this year, I don't know how people are feeling about Heupel down there.
Sure.
He's getting recruiting wins, but it doesn't feel like it's necessarily paying off on the field. Like, I think if you're Tennessee, you have to do all of that to beat Ohio State in a recruiting battle. And I think the flip side of that is, for as good of a player as DGG is, there were other factors beside winning and development that were important to either him or his family that swung the pendulum in Tennessee's direction. I'm not going to fault the kid for that. I hope he has a fine career. If things change, I ain't got no problem with the circle back, but This is just the world that we're living in right now. A team like Tennessee's got to get that kind of offer to beat a team like Ohio State in recruiting.
So while I find it hilarious that there are Ohio State fans out there saying, all right, well, give it a shot in Knoxville, see how it goes. But just remember, Columbus will accept you with open arms.
We'll always be here.
Because Ohio State, punted on 2027 recruiting him. I don't think they were as hard into 5 stars or 4-star running backs for the class of 2026, although they got a guy from Delaware. They have talent. They have talent on the roster currently. They've recruited talent there, but they made a big push to get DGG, and it's disappointing not to land that kind of a running back who, if you think he's worth more than $1 million a year, then I trust Ohio State's talent evaluation, and if that's that's the dollar amount they put on it, Damn, he can't be nothing.
Reese, you used a word in talking about all this, contract. That's a no-no. We don't like that. We don't like the word contract in all of this, because you know what that means. But one thing, JP, you were talking about with the tweets and whatnot. I was taught young in life, try to never burn any bridges, because you never know when you're going to have to go back. So I think that's one thing Ohio State has done very well in this in the recruiting process over the NIL time is, they kept tabs with Julian Sain and Caleb Downs, and there was nothing dirty in the recruitment or, hey, we don't think you're worth this, or, well, if you can get that, go get it. It's just not what we are willing to offer up. Also, remember this time last year when we're talking about running backs, everybody thought James Peoples was the next big thing at Ohio State. And James Peoples really started to come on at the end of last year. But it was a true freshman, Bo Jackson, that nobody was really talking about, that became the starting running back for Ohio State last year. And a guy that rushes for over 1,000 yards in his freshman season. Then a guy like Isaiah West, who was hurt as a freshman, came on and showed flashes at the end of the year. And I'm one who always thought it was crazy that we got in a world of football where we started downgrading running backs, because I always thought the running back was still very important. But there is a lot of guys that can play the running back at a very high level. I don't know if I would ever get in a bidding war for a running back, because as we saw last year, nobody thought Bo Jackson was going to be what he was, and he was great as a freshman.
So I think that's part of it. Number one is, like, I don't want to say those guys are a dime a dozen, but there are a lot of running backs that can get the job done. And in particular, if you're at a place like Ohio State where you feel like you're getting your offensive line together and you have a great developer, not only a great recruiter, but a great developer, and Locke coaching the backs, like, you feel pretty good about bringing the guys that you have evaluated, whether it's your top target or not, into the program. The other part about this too is, in this world of NIL, I don't necessarily think I would want to be the first to do something. And what I mean is, I'm not sure I'm going to be the first to pay a running back $2 million a year. I'll let somebody else try that out, see how it works, and then I'll learn from that. Like, part of this is, there's so much unknown, and you can either learn by doing or you can learn by watching. And I'd rather watch that one and then figure out if that's something we should do down the line.
Let another team set the precedent and be the example. Because I think, was Sorsby, is he the most out of the portal for a quarterback? Was his $6 million?
Might have been
one of, if not the most, paid for a quarterback out of the transfer portal. And he will not play a single down of college football for Texas Tech. He's out of the sport completely. So it is the ultimate buyer beware. Because what does the return on investment look like for Tennessee with DGG in year one? You got to get over 1,000 yards?
Yeah, I mean, he's got to be your best player on offense at that point.
And if he's not, what happens?
Yeah, I mean,
you can't Can't document any pay. You can't renegotiate the contract.
Are you willing to say that the year one production you're going to write off regardless of what it is because it is year one and you had to pay that to get him in the door, but the year two and year three is what you're really banking on?
Sure.
Now, that's not my approach. I'm saying I need to maximize every dollar every year. Mm-hmm. But once again, it ain't my money, so I'm not going to tell him how to spend it.
I look, James Peoples is at Penn State. I don't remember when that happened. Another player from last year's Ohio State team that hit the transfer portal was Lincoln Kienholz. He will be likely the starting quarterback at Louisville. The Cardinals are our 20 most interesting program today. We'll head down to Louisville and have a conversation about the Card. They're in an ACC where it feels like it's anybody's game.
Yes.
So if they get the quarterback spot right and they do some other work in the transfer portal, why not Louisville?
It's an interesting question to ask. Like, it is open down there, and I've got a lot of thoughts on Jeff Brohm as a coach, but that's an interesting program for sure.
And Dalton Pence, Locked On Louisville, will join us at 11:30 because, again, we're doing our 20 most interesting programs. We've got to move things up to 10 o'clock, and that thing today is our emails. So if you can get emails in before 10 o'clock, we'll be able to read those things on the air. It's also a time of hope for the Bengals and for the Cleveland Browns, but two very different versions of that word. We'll discuss that next. It's Bishop and Friends.
Atlas Butler has convenient two-hour service windows for heating, cooling, and plumbing service because nobody likes waiting around. You listen in, BMB? Nobody likes waiting around.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
And we play this summer takes you back to some of the greatest comebacks in Ohio State football history.
We go 85 yards through the heart of the South, Ohio State versus Alabama in the Sugar Bowl.
Hear Buckeye Replay this Saturday at 1 p.m. on The Fan.
Fan weather.
From the Logan AC and Heat Services Weather Center.
Good deal of sunshine continues for the rest of the day. Comfortable out there with low humidity. Highs reach the upper 70s. Some passing high clouds develop tonight. Another coolish night with lows in the upper 50s. For your Friday, partly sunny, just a touch warmer, but still not bad. Lower 80s for your Friday. For The Fan, I'm 10 Weather Impact meteorologist Justin Gerz.
Miss a little, miss a lot. Catch Bishop and Friends wherever you get your podcasts. It's free.
Sponsored by Atlas Butler Heating, Cooling, and Plumbing.
The Fan. First Friday miracles are always better with Uncle Bo. This is Bishop and Friends.
Yes, today is Eric Reeser, Joshua Perry, Ryan Baker with you until noon today. Louisville Cardinals are our program in the 20 most interesting college football programs. We do the Cardinals at 11 o'clock again. Dalton Pence from Locked On Louisville will join us at 11:30. It's anyone's game in the Atlantic Coast Conference. Duke won the thing last year, and the Blue Devils missed out on the college football playoff, then lost their quarterback to Miami, who made the college football playoff. The Canes made the national championship. We all remember how that went for Miami in last year's playoff, but now James Franklin's in the conference. Lincoln Kienholz is the quarterback for the Louisville Cardinals, or at least he's in the competition. Likely the guy. But we'll see how this whole thing goes. They did a lot of portaling, Louisville did. And I wonder, you know, Joshua, when we have those conversations about programs that really need to utilize the transfer portal for guys with their second, third chances to make something of their college football career, that's kind of the direction they need to go, at least at first.
I tend to agree with that. It feels like we'll dive a little bit deeper into this. I feel like Jeff Brohm is the perfect coach for the second chance guys.
Yeah.
So I think that is part of the way that they need to build. I also just don't know, like, we just talked about the DGG recruitment. Like, I don't know if they could ever get into that anyway. Like, I think they have to sell what they can offer to players a little bit differently. It's not, we're going to get you the big package out of high school. You're going to come here and be the star. It's like, maybe you get a guy who needs a second chance and it's like, dude, I want you here. Mm-hmm. I will work with you. We'll get you right.
Cause I think their biggest or their most notable booster's been the Papa.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you can take Papa money or if he can be as big of a booster as the Raising Cane's guy.
Listen, once upon a time in my life, I had taken some Papa money. So we talked
nothing
about
wrong
it
with
yesterday.
The pizza. I'm just
if
the
it's,
person.
If it's green.
Well,
but yes, I think some people, maybe with stronger morals, may object to taking money from certain sources.
No, look, it's the game. You need money. You need more money every single year, and you need to constantly find new streams of revenue in this game. And if you're not doing that, shame on you.
Yeah. Well, there are some teams, though, that in the privileged few that have decided that they're going to continue doing things differently. I know Michigan, Ward Manuel, and who knows what their next AD, but he opened up to the idea of putting advertisements inside of that stadium, which has not had it. I know Notre Dame is probably never going to do that, and I don't think I'd ever imagine them with the jersey patch. But like everybody else is kind of out here saying, well, if it's up to us and we need to generate money, whether we're begging boosters or we're going to corporate sponsors and we're putting their signage everywhere, we're going to do it.
I can guarantee you eventually Notre Dame and Michigan will have it, because if you don't, you're going to fall behind. And the one thing that I know that those schools don't want to do is fall behind in football. They want to keep up with the Joneses. I mean, look at what Michigan has done the past few years to keep up in their athletic department, in their football program. So jersey patches is the least of these things that these schools are going to complain about here very shortly.
So I think the only way Notre Dame ends up doing that is if teams decide that they're not going to schedule them. Like USC has gone away for a little bit. They're trying to circle back on that. You know, they used to play Michigan State. They used to play Michigan, right? Like if teams say we're just not going to do it, that TV contract that they have that they don't share with anybody else,
that's the biggest thing
that is jeopardized, right? But as long as teams will schedule them, I think they're like, we're cool taking our share of money, and we got some rich people, we'll just ask them for it.
As long as they're able to squirrel away the NBC money by themselves, I think they are less likely than the schools like Michigan.
I think Michigan would break before Notre Dame would.
I absolutely agree with you. Like Penn State, I think those two schools, especially with Big Ten, those are closer. For no reason at all, I was looking at jersey patches yesterday, and so we'll have a greater discussion on that
for
coming
no
up.
Reason.
For no reason at all.
Okay.
And I just have eyeballs, and I was just looking on the Google to see what schools out there were doing sponsored jersey patches, because there are some that make total sense. There are others that don't really make sense with the company and the theme, but it all makes sense, and we're trying to find dollars however way we can. We're trying to make more and more money year over year because things are going up. It isn't lost on me that Ross Bjork came out and said Ohio State looks to be in the next couple of years an athletic department spending $500 million. Mm-hmm. Why? Because you have to if you're trying to play the game of competing at 36 sports at the highest level. This is the ask. This is the game. If you don't like playing it, sorry. I don't tell you.
You got to find a different game to play, I guess.
You could look at the NFL, but it's the same boat they're in. I mean, the Seattle Seahawks just got sold for $9 billion. So the money's going up there. We'll have conversation about the money being doled out to teams through rights for the NFL. No surprise, it's going up. NFL training camps began yesterday for a pair of teams. Rookies for the Cleveland Browns report today. Rookies for the Bengals report on Saturday. They'll both begin full camp next week. Hope for both teams in two different ways. Hope for the Cincinnati Bengals, you get a healthy Joe Burrow. You made great strides defensively to improve that unit. I think on paper, this is one of, if not the best roster, certainly in the AFC. So for Cincinnati, it's get to the Super Bowl.
Yes.
For the Cleveland Browns, the hope is, well, there's a new head coach. And there's hope for this Browns fan. I know you told me not to do it, but I'm going to do it. There's hope that this is the last training camp I, as a Browns fan, have to deal with Deshaun Watson.
You jinxed it.
Nope. Nope. That's it.
Nope.
We're done. So last season, Deshaun Watson in the Cleveland Browns uniform.
You're going to be a very sad man.
I am a sad man. I'm a Browns fan, Joshua.
Next July, talking about Deshaun Watson.
When they cut him in June, I'll buy your beers.
He beers is going me. To play just well enough now. Just well enough.
It would be the worst case scenario.
That is the worst case scenario.
Where he were to play well enough. Because I've avoided having the conversation because look, Cleveland's won in five games this season.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to put themselves in better position to have a better shot at one of those quarterbacks in 2027. That's what I think this season's going to go. And so I've avoided having the conversation about what if Watson plays well, because I just don't think it's there.
And then
enough.
He plays well enough that they win nine games.
Nope. So the worst.
So I disagree with this just a little bit. And I hate the Deshaun Watson era in Cleveland as much as anyone because it's been a disaster. But if he goes out there and plays well, and I don't think this is happening, this is a big what if. But if he goes out there and plays well, and this team goes 10-7 or 11-6, him being back next year, I don't believe is the worst thing that possible for the Cleveland Browns. Now,
I just want to be off this ride.
I understand that, but if he's back, I don't think it's the worst thing. Now, if they're 5-12 and he's back, then that's a big problem. That might be worst case scenario.
I think best case scenario is you learn that Shedeur Sanders is a guy and you already have a guy and you can just build from there. The second best case scenario is Deshaun plays early and is terrible. Then you figure out that Shador is probably not your guy, and then you can move forward. You don't have a great year, but you have the answers to the test.
And then we can see Talen Green.
Well, all right.
That didn't even cross
in December,
my mind.
You're probably going to.
This is really unfortunate. Let me get back on track. The worst case scenario to me is not Deshaun is great again. It's that he's good enough. And then you have to deal with that. Then you have to deal with that. That would be the thing, is you want him to play to the point where he is an asset that you can trade to a team who maybe has a busted up quarterback, but is still like, we can make something, and you get him out of there, and then you just start fresh.
Because wouldn't that be the ultimate NFL ego trip? Be like, oh, he's playing all right. I can make him better.
That's
like, Deshaun's already shown you what he is. He's at best, his best was 2021. It's done. Please, to the football gods, get me off this ride.
This is what NFL coaches are. They are the guy who goes into the cabaret and says, I can save her.
I can make it work.
I can save her. This is how NFL coaches think. So there's a possibility that can happen.
So also coinciding with NFL training camps is our NFL two-a-day series, which we will walk towards kind of on the tail end of our 20 most interesting program series, which walks us all the way up to Ohio State's training camp. The first full week in August, I want to say it's the 5th, the 6th, and the 7th. We'll be doing two shows out there, and the Saturday Spectacular will emanate from the Woody Hayes Athletic Center. And one of the best things I think that Ohio State's done with trying to find new money and also trying to make their, Bo says the phrase all the time, NFLU.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that trying to make the experience that Ohio State offers you the most NFL-like in college football. And this is part of that. I mean, the first time we went out there a couple of years ago, I'd been up to Berea for NFL training camp, and it looked exactly, it felt exactly like it, and they ran it exactly like that. And it was something that I wondered, like, why aren't all teams doing this?
I don't think they can. Right? Like, it's...
I think you're right.
So I think part of our mentality around this has to be that being in Columbus is one of the ultimate advantages in the whole setup, where if you open up training camp, you've got so many people in your backyard within a 30-minute drive that can say, yeah, I'll spend a morning or an afternoon doing this.
Yeah.
Like, not trying to disparage Iowa City.
Well, Penn State too.
You know, like, yeah, I mean, these are places with great football culture. I don't know how many people they could realistically draw to come out to something like that. And so I think they would all want to do it. I'm just not sure it's as feasible as it is here in Columbus.
I also think that it's no coincidence with Ohio State. And obviously you have to have the fan backing. But look at the coaches with NFL experience on this roster. Yep. Ryan Day has coached in the NFL. Arthur Smith, and before him, Chip Kelly had coached in the NFL. Matt Patricia now had coached in the NFL. James Laurinaitis, Tim Walton had played in the NFL. Tim Walton had coached some in the NFL. So I don't think that that's any shock with the NFL flavor that has come to the coaching staff, especially as the college game has gotten more NFL-like, that you see Ohio State doing the training camp better than anybody else in the game.
It's a great point.
Ohio State earlier in this calendar year unveiled the tunnel vision, all blacks, unveiled the gray back on their sleeves, the gray legacy stripe. It's coming soon for jerseys locally. We'll get into a patch conversation in 2 minutes. Bishop and Friends on the
Atlas Beller has convenient 2-hour service windows for heating, cooling, and plumbing service. Because nobody likes waiting around. You listen in BMB, nobody likes waiting around.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Bishop and Friends is sponsored by Diamond Seller, your true jeweler for almost 80 years. The Fan, Ohio's sports destination.
What's up?
What's up, man?
What's up with you?
Sponsored by Apex Pros.
The pros who knows.
Here's what's up on a Thursday, and for no reason whatsoever, I yesterday was looking around college football and finding the schools that had done deals for jersey patch sponsorships.
Mm-hmm.
I was just looking around. I was just interested, you know, just to see the schools that had already made announcements. And some of them, you know, were surprising. Some of them made the most sense in the world. Others, I didn't understand the connection. But Joshua, when the NCAA approved sponsored jersey patches in January, we said on this program, one's coming to Columbus.
Yes.
And I would almost guarantee, because I don't want fully guarantee, that before Ohio State kicks off on September 5th against Ball State, the Buckeyes will have a sponsored jersey patch.
I think it'd be safe to guarantee.
Yeah, I get it. You have to find money wherever you can.
Mm-hmm.
And Andrew Lind, we bring up his Ohio State uniform database all the time. Like, he has curated the most extensive collection online of Ohio State football jerseys. Talk about it all the time. So Andrew Lind's the go-to guy, I think, when it comes to OSU uniforms. Has this from Nike that requires any potential advertisement patch to be team colored.
Mm-hmm.
So let's hypothetically say there was a scarlet uniform that Ohio State has. So not hypothetically, they have the scarlet uniform, but the Big Ten patch is white. The swoosh is white.
Sure.
So a potential sponsor logo, you'd want to have white.
Right.
And it'd be great if they could find like a circular logo.
Yeah.
That kind of fit like the O aesthetic that Ohio State's going for.
Are there any?
But it's white.
Businesses companies that do
not
a lot of business around here.
Off the top of my head, that would
fit
like a circular
criteria. Maybe you got a huge campus up
you're
near.
You're putting me on the spot here.
Polaris.
Up near you?
Yeah, where a lot of people, thousands of people work.
A banking institution, maybe?
Potentially.
Potentially.
Look, I don't know.
You got to chase the money however you can.
Well, I know the bank's got the money.
I see what he did there.
I get this from Ohio State's standpoint. I also understand where people are going to be like, I'm not trying to have my team look like a NASCAR racer.
Yeah, so that to me is an interesting thing that people say, because it feels like a very dramatic response to changes that they are resistant to. To me, if Ohio State was going to get into this, by the way, like, the Nike portion of it never crossed my mind that they would probably also want to have standards on what one of their
biggest brands would look like
with a patch on their jersey. But I also think Ohio State was always going to be tasteful about whatever went on there. Like, I don't think they ever wanted it to detract from one of the most recognizable uniforms in all of sports. Like, I always believe that whatever a patch would look like would be as small as you could do it without turning off companies from wanting to do business with you. And it would blend really well. It wouldn't be this ugly monstrosity. And the whole NASCAR thing, like, we're not putting 50 patches on a jersey. It's going to be one little thing.
One or two.
And by the way, when we do it with the bowl games, I'm sure those jersey patches are much bigger and louder and a little bit more grating to look at than whatever the sponsorship patch is going to be.
It was like a Battle Frog Fiesta Bowl patch, Joshua. You might have been on that team, that it was just large.
It's a big patch. Those patches are big. And by the way, like, I get why they are. It was never going to look like that for a sponsorship patch.
I don't even know what a Battle Frog is. It is a thing anymore.
I understand.
They did the Fiesta Bowl for a hot minute.
The uniform. And, oh, it's the uniform. I've never once watched a football game and been like, you know what? That jersey patch is out of control. That jersey patch is taken away from my viewing of this game. Like, what? These are things that I just don't understand why people have a problem with. It's not like you're going to put a big nationwide sticker on the side of the Ohio State football
helmet. Don't give them ideas, Baker.
And change the helmet. But like a little patch up top or a little patch above the name, like, I don't get that. And again, I've talked about this before. Mm-hmm. I would much rather have this stuff than you asking me to round up.
So expect it from Ohio State. Expect an announcement sometime before the season.
Sure.
And it'll probably be fine. You'll look at it. If you don't like it at first, I'd say give it a minute. You won't notice it. It's not going to be like what the Big 12's doing, and they're going to have their Big 12 patch co-branded with Monster Energy.
Right.
So
another patch if you can do business.
Kansas has XRP cryptocurrency on theirs.
I don't think I like that.
Along with Monster and the Big 12. I don't know what the cryptocurrency has to do with Kansas, but for the Jayhawks, you got to find the money. BYU, their Provo-based tech company, and Entrada.
What do they do?
I think it's like a real estate AI.
Let's look it up.
But they missed, I think, a real good opportunity to do Crumble, just with how the offseason went and keeping Kalani Sitake and James Franklin serving Crumble cookies at the Virginia Tech press conference where he was introduced. Oklahoma State's Osage Nation is their patch. It's an Indian reservation with casinos in Oklahoma.
Hmm.
South Florida, the Bulls, you talked about it on Monday, Tampa General Hospital, California.
Can I say something real quick?
Of course.
I think it now the casinos in the crypto, I have a thing about that. It is what it is. A hospital system putting a patch on a jersey feels, and we see this, like I think the Chargers, we had one of the Southern Cal hospital systems.
The Browns do one too for their practice uniforms.
And it's hilarious to me where the hospitals are like, yeah, buy sponsorship.
All the hospital bills that could have been paid with that money.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm getting at. Like, it's pretty damn expensive to walk in there in the first place. They're like, yeah, buy sponsorship. We got plenty of money.
Michigan State has the Michigan State University Federal Credit Union sponsor on theirs.
And sure.
Theirs is a very large patch. Like, you won't be able to not see it on the Spartan uniforms. Wisconsin's, I think, got the most perfectly matched one at Culver's.
I fully agree.
Cheese curds in Wisconsin.
So this is one thing, Reese, that you talked about with Nike, where they're not going to let the jersey patch be different colors than the jersey. And we looked at the Wisconsin one with the Culver's, and obviously Wisconsin is red and white, and Culver's is blue. I thought they were Adidas, but they could be Under Armour. They're not Nike. That's where you're going to see maybe it stick out a little bit. Like, if Nike has one for Ohio State where it has to be white or red or scarlet, you know, or gray, whatever, but a blue would stick out a little bit. And even then on the Wisconsin jerseys, when you saw the pictures of them, it doesn't look bad. You're not going to notice it.
So can I mention, this is completely off topic, but the first time I ever saw a Michigan State University Federal Credit Union was in Chicago.
Really?
Yes.
Huh.
Thought it was really odd.
And out of place almost.
Yeah. Very interesting.
They missed the boat. I mean, Rocket Mortgage is right there for them, but I do think the Dan Gilbert gives enough money to Michigan State where they're like, let's, you know, find some new. It's, again, all about finding new money.
Yes.
It's not about the donors you've gone to multiple times already that they will continue to go to. It's all about getting new revenue streams in for your athletic departments, because a lot of the schools that I mentioned are going to have those logos on all of their uniforms. LSU's got Woodside Energy on all of their athletic department uniforms. Arkansas Tyson Foods, also kind of perfect.
Yes, it is.
All of every Razorback athletic uniform is going to have a Tyson Foods thing on it. California, the first in the ACC, which I had to write down because, Cal Berkeley's in the ACC, has an AI platform Dialpad, which is the official AI platform for fan experience of Cal Athletics. Like, go back 5 years and try to explain this to a college football fan. I think their head might spin around and pop off.
I think mine would have.
This is where we're at.
I mean, we just gotta settle into this world. I think the more we're in it, the more we'll be like, it is what it is.
Yeah. I mean,
should we make a poll and try to get people's opinions on the jersey patches? Because I know a lot of people are against it, and I'm just not sure why.
Love it, leave it, indifferent.
I like that.
Yeah.
Because I think there is a larger portion of the fans out there that just don't care. But because it's new, it's discussion. So if you have a pair of eyeballs and were on social media yesterday, you saw something that made you have a feeling. It made you had an opinion on something.
Yeah.
And it was discussed.
Sure.
And that thing that we, you know, that may or may not have happened yesterday, that may or may not be about Ohio State, may or may not be announced sometime in the near future.
May or may not be a photo
opinion on it
floating around social media.
Like, we have eyeballs, guys. Like, that's not going to get too much into it, but we have eyeballs. And so if you're going to have something that people put eyeballs on and you want to hold off on it, don't let anybody put eyeballs on it.
Yeah, I mean, yes.
By the way,
yes.
This certain photo that may or may not have been floated out there. Kenyatta Jackson looks weird in number two to me.
He did it.
He looks weird in number
two. Just go there.
It looks weird.
Ah, man. What a time.
I was thinking yesterday, you talk about numbers, and Kenyatta Jackson going from 97, I think, to number two this season with David Gabriel George and Tennessee giving him zero. I'm thrilled that they didn't say, you can also have zero if you come to Ohio State. Like, you know, that's the block O. Give it to Connor Hawkins, who will be our savior this season for the Buckeyes.
Who do we think is going to get that? The block O.
That's a good question. We'll think about in the break and discuss next. It's Bishop and Friends.
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Our degenerate gamblers, Dave Biddle at Scotty Vegas, every Sunday morning at 9 for On the Money.
Presented by Krieger Ford, your best bet for a new car or truck. Visit Krieger Ford on Morse Road today or go online at KriegerFord.com. The Fan Poll is sponsored by JT's Pizza and Pub, home of award-winning pizza and $2 tall boys. All day, every day.
Our top men are working on everything except this show. This is Bishop and Friends.
We did have to bring in a top man for this segment because, and you can see it at 971 BFS, we now have a t-shirt. This has been something in the works for a long time. It's got the silhouettes of the three on this program, Bo Bishop, myself, Ryan Baker. So the way I'll sell it is at 971 BFS, the link's there. If you want to wear a t-shirt with Bo Bishop's silhouette, you have the opportunity. And also myself and Baker. Mine has a mustache, and you can see I'm not rocking the mustache. Conversations,
but you could be by noon today.
I guess if I wanted to. Conversations between my girlfriend and I have included the word elope. So I'm not trying to add any more facial hair onto this.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just going to be clean shaven and look nice for the potential for pictures. But the man who's really been behind all of this for so long, and I wanted to give you, I want to give Jen your proper flowers. Scotty Vegas joins us for the Fan Store's grand reopening.
Yes. Well, each show now has a new shirt to market, and I love my favorite part about the design of your guys' show shirt is how strict Bo was about the exact amount of hair that's represented in his beard. Like, I mean, we had to go back 3, 4, 5 different times with design options for Bo because, gosh, this beard had to look absolutely perfect. And I think the way the hair came out and the way the beard came out, I think it's perfect.
The best facial hair on the air is how the shirt is phrased. And yeah, I mean, Bo's the block O of the show, right? So we were talking in the last segment, Scotty, about of this Ohio State roster, who is that guy for this season? Because you weren't going to give DGG zero, because that's the block O goes to your unquestioned leader. And so Joshua asked the question in the break, and I'm glad you're here because I want to get your thoughts on it as well. Joshua, who did you think on this current Ohio State roster could own that block O this season?
I mean, one of the first players to pop into my mind was Brandon Ennis.
Yeah.
He's been a captain before. You know, he's a guy that people have pointed to in terms of his leadership and what he provides to the team. He is a veteran player. I don't think you look at part of the selection of the block O is like, who is a guy who's not going to embarrass us? Like, there's zero chance he's going to do anything dumb that would embarrass us. And I don't think they ever get the vibe that he would do anything like that. So that was an initial thought for me was Brandon Ennis, who's a veteran guy who's been a captain, would be a prime candidate for it.
So the first thing that popped into my head was one of the linemen, whether it's Hensman, Montgomery, or Sarveld. And I think I landed on Sarveld. So I think it's going to be either Austin Sarveld or, as you mentioned, Brandon Ennis. And the reason I would want it to be Ennis is because he gets to wear it. If it's one of the linemen, they don't get to wear it, and they just have to have the patch like Thayer Munford did back a few years ago. But I'm guessing it's going to be Austin Sarveld.
Yeah, and I hate to be boring, but I agree with Joshua. Like, Brandon Ennis to me is the first name that popped mm-hmm. in my head, and I'm like, that's probably it right there. So I know that's kind of the boring answer, but that's the first name that popped.
I look to the three players that Ohio State's going to Big Ten Media Days with next week: Jeremiah Smith, Jalen McClain, and Julian Sain. And while those are three of your unquestioned leaders, are those the block O? Are those the kind of guys that would rock the block O like that? Like, that would be, Jeremiah's not going off a 4. That's kind of his brand.
Yep.
Julian's not going off a 10.
I also, I don't want my quarterback, and I know he probably wouldn't wear it anyway, but I don't even want to think about my quarterback with a 0, period. Like, I don't, like, you know, I know it's the block O, but like, I'm cool on that.
Sure.
I feel like it's a different mentality anyway of the guy who's getting it. Like, yeah. I'm good. He doesn't have to be that guy.
I saw a JB in the YouTube chat said Peyton Pierce for the block O. I wonder on that side of the ball, like, could Kenyatta be given the blocko, although he's, again, switching from 97 to 2. And I'll be very interested to see what Kenyatta looks like in that number 2 jersey.
Think
but
about
if he's going to get the blocko. Well, no, he switched his number. He wants 2.
If you went 97, which legendary,
yeah,
2,
the lineage
legendary,
of that.
And then it's like, yeah, we're going to throw the blocko on top of that.
Because there's 2. There's a lot with 2.
Yes.
But also, yeah, the blocko. So very interesting to see how that gets assigned, who owns that mantle, and then how it looks with whichever player who's earned it, deservedly so. Now, what I wanted to do is, because Bo's not here, and Scotty, you had mentioned, BreakingTee.com is where our fan shirt store is. Click on it. Click on BreakingTee.com or just type it in. Search Bishop and Friends. Don't search any of the other shows. I know they have their other shirts, and those are really cool, but you only want the Bishop and Friends shirt because it's the only thing that's going to really impress your friends. Like, I can see it on you all now. The Bishop and Friends t-shirt, the best facial hair on the air. You look great. Babe, you look great in this shirt. Bo's not here. He didn't do the job of sending in his shirt size. So I'm going to give Bo's shirt away on the air.
Yes, let's do it.
What we'll do at 971BFS, Joshua was recognized at a gas station on Tuesday. What was the high school highlight that Joshua was reminded of at that gas station earlier this week? If you remember the incident at 971BFS, I don't know if I can guarantee the first person, but I can guarantee that if you send it and it's the correct incident Joshua was remembered for at 971BFS, we'll get you Bo's shirt.
Do we want them to comment on the post that you posted of the shirt with the link?
I'll just say at 971BFS because we'll be able to see it that way and you'll get your social media flowers, but also you'll get Bo's shirt. So Bo doesn't get one. He'll have to spend the couple dollars it costs.
I think he's got it.
I do too.
Yeah, he'll be all right.
I think he'll be all right with
that.
Now,
let me ask you guys this, because you guys have been talking jersey patches this morning, and so you've got your own shirt now. Let's say you could pick any kind of jersey patch, any kind of shirt patch that we're throwing like right on the sleeve to really represent you. It could be anything out there. What would be your jersey patch?
Roosters.
So that fun casual patch.
Fun answer. Casual joint. Yeah. That's what I'd want
good
on
answer.
Mine.
I got to think about it.
I'm thinking too. It's a little bit more difficult than Baker's making it seem like it is.
Captain Morgan would be a good one for me too.
Captain. Yes, it would.
That's the swing.
I've seen you out on the golf course.
That's the official swing lube. I mean, myself.
Miller Lite. I have my fair share of that.
Yeah.
I mean, I drink enough Panera coffee in the morning. But I'd take that logo.
Could I get a patch that was sponsored by Scotty Vegas's gambling habits?
There you go.
The Vegas Sportsbook.
I think we can arrange that. In fact, Ryan, I brought in a shirt. I got this shirt on the money shirt that we did in the fan store about a year and a half ago. And I ordered it for you and I forgot to give it to you. And I just found it. So I did bring it in. It's from Breaking Tea. That's still up on the share. Yes.
I thought I got my On the Money shirt.
You haven't worked on that show in about two years.
It's been a while.
But we got that.
So we've got shirts for every show. Bishop and Friends, Morning Juice, T-Bone and Tyvis have Burpees and Farties.
Ew.
The Juice is Loose.
The Morning Juice
morning
shirt
juice.
Is pretty good.
The White Bronco. I think that missed the mark not having Bodie hanging out at the side of the Bronco, but we can do revisions to these shirts. Common Man and Timmy have a shirt. Buckeye Show's got a great shirt. The San Diego of the Midwest. Rothman and Ice have a great shirt. So there's anything on the money.
No, you got it. You got it.
You guys are ready to go with that. Breaking Tea, tremendous job out of you and Jen for getting that all together and fighting for what is a no-brainer for a place like the Fan.
Well, okay. One other question for you guys. So we've been looking at different merch to order for the Fan store and for the hosts through the fall. And one thing that's come up, and Matty Ice brought this up, was he wants fan bucket hats for the fall. Like, okay. He's like, all right, we're going to be out doing these hot tailgates all these summer. And I was like, boy, I was surprised by Matty's answer of what kind of merch he would want would be a fan bucket hat. Where do you guys stand on bucket hats? Because that surprised me out of Matty.
I like a bucket. My dad is actually the king of the bucket hat. I mean, he went from, you know, the Kangol era. Now he just kind of wears whatever bucket's out there. So I think it would be pretty good.
Okay. All right.
So it's a week late for me because I'd have used it all last week in the pool at Florida.
Right.
And so I would have used it.
And I used mine at Myrtle Beach, too. Yeah. So that kind of got me going. I was like, oh, yeah, we could do the
CBJ one instead, but I would have rocked the fan one all week.
Okay.
I think the fan bucket hat does fit with us here.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not a hat guy. I have good enough hair. I don't want it to be held down by anything. So if we're going to do a hat, bucket would be the best because that's the leisure hat, right?
Yeah. So I'll tell you the other thing that would actually play really well for people in this building and probably people listening is a pair of fan slides. So, you know, you got the comfortable footwear.
But you
got
to have the store first. And so we have that at BreakingT.com. Again, search Bishop and Friends for your Bishop and Friends best hair on the air shirt. I'll try to run through a winner for our question at 971BFS to get Bo's shirt. We'll let you know at 10 o'clock. Scotty, thanks so much for all the hard work you do. Thank you, Jen. I know you're out there dropping F-bombs on somebody. You guys put in such a good amount of work to get this done. We're at the finish line with this, and so more things, better things on the horizon. Thanks for joining us,
bud. Yeah, thank you, guys.
Some breaking Blue Jackets news and your emails coming up next. It's Bishop and Friends.
Atlas Butler has convenient two-hour service windows for heating, cooling, and plumbing service. Because nobody likes waiting around. You listen in, BMB? Nobody likes waiting around.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Casting live from the McDaniel GM Superstore Studios, driving excellence since 1916. Chevrolet. Together, let's drive. WBNS HD1 Columbus.
Good morning, I'm Eric Reeser. The Columbus Blue Jackets and goaltender Jet Greaves have avoided arbitration. Both sides reached an agreement this morning. 3 years, $15 million. The 25-year-old Greaves made 54 starts for the CBJ last season, posting a 9.908 save percentage. Jackets and forward Cole Sillinger await arbitration this coming Monday in Toronto. In baseball last night, Jose Ramirez returned from a five-week IL stint because of a broken left hand. J-Ram had a pair of hits, drove in a pair of runs. Guardians fell to the Twins 10-6. They look to take the four-game series against the Twins with a win today at 140. As for the Reds, Cincinnati made it two straight with a 5-3 win over the Mariners last night in Seattle. Sal Stewart's 3-1 shot in the seventh was the difference. Reds off on Thursday. This update sponsored by Ramos Roofing. Request your free roof or exterior assessment today at RamosRoofingOhio.com. Ramos Roofing, reliable, local, built right.
The show that understands the importance of a situational beverage.
You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
Yes, you are. Eric Reeser, Joshua Perry, Ryan Baker on with you on this Thursday edition of the program. We got a winner for Bo's t-shirt. I'll let you know here in a second once I get everything finalized, but you all understood the assignment very well. We just won't tell Bo about this, okay? Joshua, I know a guy that maybe can get you a Bishop and Friends shirt if you so choose, but BreakingT.com, search Bishop and Friends. The only search you need to enter in that, or the only shirt you need to purchase. And then we have other fan merchandise. That's where you want to go to get that.
So, Bo not having the shirt.
Mm-hmm. Well, he's not here.
I know. Is he going to buy the shirt? Somebody's going to give it to him.
Probably. So, the shirt that is supposed to be saved for Bo is going to one of our listeners.
Sure.
And my guess is he's got enough pull around here to get one.
I think that's fair.
Yeah.
But I would love to see Uncle Bo have to click onto the website, punch in all his details, pay for the express shipping because he's got the cash for it.
Well, that's the thing.
And then wait by the door for the FedEx man to pull up.
So here's my question with the shirts, Reese. Would it be weird for all of us to wear our own show shirts?
No. Why? Why would that be weird?
I don't know.
We like got to be our own advocate.
Like if we work with Scotty and we get a JP shirt mm-hmm. up at the Breaking TV website, I would wear one of those. But should I wear our own Bishop and Friends shirt?
So to answer your question, I feel like yes is the right answer. I had a podcast once upon a time and I had t-shirts
uh-huh.
and my face was on it and I wore it
okay
unapologetically
yeah,
because I wanted people to find the podcast and to listen to
right.
it
right. And if you're out in the wild and it's like the concert t-shirts or band t-shirts, you're walking around and somebody looks at you, get your Bishop and Friends shirt on, they might not recognize you, but they look at that thing you're wearing, they're like, I like that thing.
Well, the other part about it too is this shirt that you guys would be wearing is not nearly as bad as the one that I was talking about with my actual likeness on it. Because it's the facial hair, right? So it's not as bold as like, this is me plastered on the front of a shirt. It's like, this is some sort of imagery of me, but it's up to the imagination for you to make the connection.
Yeah, I think the silhouette's here, and I'm holding it up to the camera, so it may or may not get it. But at 971 BFS, we have the link to go purchase the shirts. You can also, what Breaking Tea does well is if you want to get a sweatshirt, you can also just have this printed on that. And again, the hope with this is because Jen and Scotty have put in so many hours to get the fan store up and running, is that we build towards more items. So
Reese,
maybe,
sorry, hold it up again and I'll zoom in on it while you're talking.
Okie dokie, yes. Top Men Baker, putting the zoom function on if you haven't. I mean, this is tremendous radio, but on YouTube, you can see it. But again, also at 971 BFS, you heard there in the award eligible update that the Blue Jackets and goalie Jet Greaves avoided arbitration. Greaves has agreed to a 3-year, $15 million deal with the CBJ. Elliot Friedman had the reporting first. Aaron Portsline comes in and says, well, they were thinking $5 million. That's what the average annual value for this contract is. And Greaves is 25. And he was really good last season. 26-19-9 was his record. A pair of shutouts. 0.908 save percentage. He's your unquestioned netminder here. I do, Baker, have a little bit of a feeling paying two goalies, $5 million each, but the Elvis Merzlikins contract is, it's there. And I don't think there was a hope that you maybe be able to get out from under that, but that's not the case. So your goaltenders are going to be making $10 million.
So, and it sure seems like the roster is set heading into the year, but I don't think there's any guarantee, Reese, that you're going to be paying two goaltenders that, because you could still get a buyout of Elvis. Maybe you still get a trade before the season. Maybe you get into training camp and somebody's goaltender gets injured, goes down. So there are ways. I don't think there's any guarantee. I do think it sure seems like the roster is set, which is really disappointing to me. You know that I wanted them to go sign Patrick Kane or at least try.
Mm-hmm.
He was going back to Chicago this year on a 2-year, $8 million deal. Yep. So that was a little bummer for me. But it sure seems like this Blue Jackets roster is set. You got the re-signing of Danton Heinen yesterday. Jet Greaves is locked up for the next 3 years. So it looks like this is what you're moving forward with.
So Kirill Marchenko's still got a year left on his deal, if I'm not mistaken. There's still the Adam Fantilli albatross out there.
Mm. Which is crazy to me that that's not done yet.
And I know Cole Sillinger and the Jackets have scheduled arbitration this coming week in Toronto, but I just looked to Don Waddell. What's taken so long with the Fantilli thing here? I think the longer you wait, the less easy I feel about it.
But if you're Fantilli, wouldn't you want to wait a little bit?
I don't blame him.
I don't blame him.
I can't. The Carlson thing dictates, with the numbers being the same or similar numbers between the two players.
Right.
Well, you got the Bedard deal that came out that was 5-year, $15 million, so it was less than Carlson.
Sure.
And Bedard has better numbers than both. So I think that should temper that a little bit. I think most of the NHL and most of these agents know that that 5-year, $18 million deal was an outlier, and it was trying to force Anaheim into a situation where they're going to lose players at some point, however that is, because they're going to have to sign Cutter Gauthier too. So that was Philly putting Anaheim in a tough spot. It's just the numbers are out there now. I'm not sure what they're waiting on. I'm guessing it's a term. I think the Jackets still want to try to go 8 while they can. And I think Fantilli's camp wants that 5-year deal, kind of like the other two.
For every sport, right? Like with the conversation that we've had throughout the program, that we've had throughout programs, that we've had for a couple of years now, is the price just keeps going up.
Mm-hmm.
And I know for Fantilli's camp, it just keeps going up. I want to get to this real quick because it is a segment we do Thursdays at 11 o'clock. We got to move it because our 20 most interesting program centers on the Louisville Cardinals. We'll do that in the 11 o'clock hour. And I don't tell people where to send these, but our listeners do a great job with our emails.
Our comment box is always open. Any feedback is mostly appreciated.
The mail never stops. It just keeps coming and coming and coming. There's never a let up. It's relentless. Every day it piles up more and more and more. You got to get it out. And the more you get out, the more it keeps coming in.
Bishop and Friends present Emails.
Sponsored by Window Nation. Buy 4 windows, get 4 free sale. Visit windownation.com now.
This comes to us from Peggy, and based off of a conversation we had last week about movies rated PG-13 or R that maybe we saw a little bit earlier than we should have, or uncomfortable movie scenes that you're watching with your parents, and Bo as a dad, as he's watching stuff with his eldest, has to realize, oh, I don't remember that scene happening, or That's an uncomfortable place to be. But Peggy says, I don't remember watching inappropriate movies with my parents. But at 14, my friend had cable and we watched Clockwork Orange. Too much. Also, The Exorcist at about 16. That was also a lot. Though she says she continues to love scary movies. Peggy, thank you so much for the email. Yeah, I'm not sure like the first time I saw a rated R movie, but I remember going to see The Matrix Reloaded with my mom and my brother and walking out of the theater and my mom turning us and be like, that might have been a little too much for you guys. We were 12, 13 at the time.
I saw the movie The Fly. Have you seen that?
Oh, at what age?
I think I could have been no older than 8 years old. Okay. And I had nightmares for weeks off of that movie. Like him, actually, the scene where he's physically morphing into the fly, I couldn't sleep after watching that. I have no idea why I was watching it, why I was allowed to watch it, but it happened.
So I don't remember like the first rated R movie or seeing something that scared me, but I do remember this. I want to say it was freshman year in English class. We had to read The Scarlet Letter, and then we watched the movie. And I believe, is there a version of it with Demi Moore, I think, or whatever? But somehow in that movie, she ends up topless. And I remember our English teacher jumping in front of the television screen with her arms stuck wide out, like trying to block us all from seeing it.
Yes, it does feel like, and Joshua, I have mentioned that this is very much what we're doing here with Ryan Baker and myself. We're the AV cart of sports talk radio. Just kind of get wheeled in and, you know, turn your brain off. If you're a teacher doing that, shouldn't you have done some scouting on what you're going to be showing at first? Or is it just one of those things, that'll learn sometime?
Yeah, I think you probably preview, right? It would make sense, at least to me, that you would preview. But some of these teachers, you know, they were just like, hey, this should be fine. We read the book. If it's based off of the book, you know, it could be okay.
And I wonder, you know, now with streaming and the accessibility of every kind of content, like puts the onus on the parents even more so than ever.
Yeah.
Because I think each like app has its own parental controls, but T's and P's to going and selecting every different app and putting a different parental control on and then trying to remember all of those passwords.
Well, you can get you the password manager.
And you gotta remember the password for that thing. We got an email from Bob that I want to get to because it's about the changing sports TV landscape. And as we do have a sports television professional with us, it would behoove us to get Joshua's expertise on that. And we'll do it next. Bishop and Friend.
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Retirement from football hits everyone differently.
For Devere Posey and Dane Sanzenbacher, it means sitting around watching sports clips on the internet and arguing about them. Search for Didn't Catch That on YouTube and subscribe.
Fan weather.
From the Logan AC and Heat Services Weather Center.
Good deal. Sunshine continues for the rest of the day. Comfortable out there with low humidity. Highs reach the upper 70s. Some passing high clouds develop tonight. Another coolish night with lows in the upper 50s. For your Friday, partly sunny. Just a touch warmer, but still not bad. Lower 80s for your Friday. For The Fan, I'm 10 Weather Impact meteorologist Justin Gertz.
Miss a little, miss a lot. Catch Bishop and Friends wherever you get your podcasts. It's free.
Sponsored by Atlas Butler Heating, Cooling, and Plumbing.
The Fan.
The best hair on the air.
You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
Yes, you are. No Paul Feinbaum this week. He's at SEC Media Days down in Destin, or Tampa. I guess I got so used to saying where they did the SEC Media Days. Tampa doesn't feel like it's in the SEC footprint. It is in Florida.
Yes.
So there's that. I think there was talk that they were going to move it to Nashville. Like, these cities are probably bidding on them, I think, at this point.
I would assume.
Big Ten Media Days next week in Chicago. Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday for that. So Big Ten Media Day sponsored by Discover. You had SEC Media Day sponsored by Regions. Again, find the money where you can. Ryan Day going with Julian Sane, Jeremiah Smith, and Jalen McClain. Two festivities in Chicago. So we'll have plenty of coverage of that next week. We're also going to start off Monday with SMU as our 20 most interesting program series continues. We're going to take a break from the ACC. We'll do in Louisville today. We'll have Michigan State tomorrow on the program. And then, because Bo's coming back Monday, we couldn't really do his beloved Ponies without him being here.
That's fair.
What we can do is continue with the mailbag. And this comes to us from Bob. The title is Changing Sports TV Landscape. Concerning the recent layoffs at ESPN, where do you think the near future of sports TV news is going? He says, I was a Sports Center junkie in the 90s. Mike and Mike was my morning viewing as I prepared for my workday as recently as 2 years ago when I was a dedicated listener of Dan Patrick. I've traded all of that for your morning show. Expensive personalities seem more like an endangered species now. Sports broadcasting is an ever-increasing expense, even as a large swath of folk have decided where their precious dollar goes. The national talking heads narrative going the way of rotary phones.
So I've got a lot of thoughts on the changing landscape. From the personality standpoint, what we've seen at ESPN, I mentioned this yesterday, is a shift from having a bunch of people who do some things there to having Stephen A. Smith, who has his own show and he does some of the NBA broadcasts and all that different kind of stuff. You have Pat McAfee, who is literally everywhere. And they're paying those guys a bunch of money. And the Schefters of the world are getting paid a ton. They're paying Shams for what he's doing, Kirk Herbstreit, right? So you have a lot of really highly paid talent over there. And then you've got your Sports Center, more of kind of like the news people and not the opinion people. And they make good money, but like that middle tier of people, they have been the ones that are squeezed out where it's like, you know, might make a couple million a year, but you're not Stephen A. to us. They're out the door. So that's part of it. The idea of sports news, because that was the term that was used in there. We have to look at media and news media in particular very differently than we did before. And I would go even to the CNNs, MSNBC, Fox News of the world. They are producing opinion-based content for most of what they put on air. SportsCenter certainly is a news program, but they also bring in the opinion people to talk about some of the news that's going on. Everything you watch in the morning after that SportsCenter goes off up until basically SportsCenter comes on again, that's all opinion stuff. And it's happening everywhere that's supposed to quote unquote do news. And my thoughts on that is you can clip the opinions, you can put them on social media, and you can use the impressions there as a way to bolster what you call your viewership. That's where the landscape has gone. It's basically, can we create a moment that we can blast out to a bunch of people and they interact with it in other places that aren't their living room?
So good what you said there, JP, because the high expensive paid guy isn't going away. They're just putting more on their plate. Mm-hmm. Schefter's everywhere. McAfee's everywhere. Stephen A's everywhere. So the high paid guy is actually getting more prominent and bigger, and it's squeezing out the people that may not have, you know, that personality. Or David Lloyd, who has hosted SportsCenter for 27 years, is out the door now.
Yeah, and by 27, they're making a lot of money.
Yeah, so why pay him when we can have this person just out of college yep. come in and do this? I would almost argue that sports news is dead,
mm-hmm.
and it's sports opinion. If you want sports news, you can go find it on your different platforms, and your people that you like that are getting squeezed out, you can go find them on their own platforms now. I didn't always love what Cam Newton said, but I saw he just had an article and said, talking about the ESPN and his tenure, like, the only way you can survive stuff like this is to have your own platform.
Right.
Because then nobody can take it away from you. Nobody can fire you from it. But it is very interesting. Like, it's not necessarily sports news anymore. It's more sports opinion, because that gets people fired up and riled up, and those clips get, you know, they get shown over and over and over and get millions of views, and that's how people make money.
So in terms of the own platform thing, I think it's really important to recognize there are a lot of creators in different spaces and Substack and people who write for local publications and folks on YouTube who probably have the information you're looking for if you're looking for news. I would say if you're somebody who is interested in news, find your beat reporters, find your local TV news people.
Yeah.
Find those kinds of folks, because if you're looking nationally, you're going to find a whole bunch of talking heads that are just giving their opinion on everything.
I think to the discussion around McAfee and Stephen A., And McAfee's kind of like the inverse of what Cam Newton, Ryan Clark, because he did his own thing.
Mm-hmm.
Then ESPN bought
right.
the rights to it, and McAfee's everywhere. So say what you want about if you like Pat McAfee stuff, if you don't, if you like Stephen A. Smith stuff, if you don't, they're on 7 days a week.
Right.
And during the football season, you can't turn on an ESPN anything and not see him. Even WWE, who they signed an agreement with, Pat is a character on that programming.
Right. So I think the Pat McAfee experience has flipped the way that you have to look at media talent. So with Stephen A., for example, he came up the traditional route. He was a writer for newspapers, and then they're like, this guy is a great opinionist, so we're going to bring him on to TV programs, and he blew up that way.
Yeah.
Pat McAfee was an independent guy whose star blew up, and ESPN, to your point, they pay him $60 million a year, reportedly now, to be able to put his show on air. They don't even own the show. But they have basically told us that they're not in the business of creating stars anymore. Like, ESPN was a place where people used to go and they would make stars. And now they're just like some of the guys who have been in the business for a while. It's a different thing. But for newer talent, it's like we're going to find people who already have a platform following on social media, who we already know can do the job. We're not going to create the star. We're just going to boost it.
If you are looking for work, the Miami Heat are reportedly hiring a director of YouTube strategy. Now, that's up on LinkedIn as of this morning. It's still up on the website. And I wonder if, you know, maybe there was a dismissal of their old director of YouTube strategy, because I don't know if you saw this, but earlier in the week, the Heat posted a link to a scheduled live stream on YouTube titled LeBron James Introductory Press Conference. The date was scheduled for July 27th. So that'd be this coming Monday. Heat said that was a mistake, but the screenshots live in infamy.
Sure.
And you had Miami Heat offseason things, and then this scheduled LeBron James introductory press conference. So Shams Charania said on Tuesday that the social media department was preparing for the possibility of James's signing and mistakenly posted the link to the team's YouTube page. A day later, they're looking for a new director of YouTube strategy.
So this isn't an uncommon thing for...
No, we do it in radio.
Yeah. People have stories ready, right? Like writers, when news breaks, like typically it's not them just finding out and then typing up that whole long story that you read. Like they have that thing ready to go for when the news broke. So the idea that you would prepare the YouTube stream to be able to have it ready to go, that doesn't surprise me. I'm curious about this YouTube strategy job that popped up though, because was it the idea, and you'd be surprised with companies, large companies that don't understand the digital age, was it the idea that they didn't have a dedicated YouTube person and they just grouped that all into social media? And so they're like, we probably need to hire that guy. Or did they just have somebody who did not know how to do the job right, which a lot of big companies do that too.
Right.
And they're like, we got to get a new guy in. So I'm curious about that.
I do wonder, they had the intern just do all their social media and the intern's overworked, underpaid,
yep,
and just threw it out there because like, hey, get ready. Cause the Miami Heat, the Cleveland Cavaliers, I believe as of this morning, have the best odds to land LeBron. So whenever that announcement comes, I don't know if the 27th had anything to do with it, but just being a likely, if it's probably on a Monday, he's probably going to gobble up the news cycle. He'll be the guy that everybody talks about on a day where there's not going to be World Cup. There's not going to be other news that people want to look for. There's not going to be much in the way of college football. Like, Big Ten Media Days start next Tuesday. So you put red yarn on a corkboard and you figure, okay, maybe. And then hopefully the Miami Heat were like, yeah, we got to actually pay somebody for this. Because it's a very, as we've seen, Joshua, and I didn't really notice this until the Fan got involved more and more with YouTube, that it's the social media platform that I use the most.
I think it's the most popular social media platform in the world right now.
I think so.
Yeah.
So, hold on. You guys are telling me that something like a picture of a jersey patch might get released before it's supposed to?
Okay.
Like, that wasn't supposed to...
We don't know. We don't know officially.
Saying stuff like that? Is that happens?
These things tend to happen.
I don't yes. know about that. I don't. You'd have to give me an example of a time that might have happened. But.
It just seems like you're supposed to hold this, and somehow it leaks out.
It's very interesting. Yes, it's a very interesting thing you bring up there.
I can't believe things like that would happen.
Oh, what a time! What a time!
We had a report from Sportico earlier this week that says NFL 2025 national revenue tops $14 billion. Teams get $450 million. Surprise, That's more than the $433 million they got in 2024. So fiscal year 2025, $450 million plus doled out to their 32 clubs. The rights fees go up. NFL teams, they get more and more money. But as you saw with the Seattle Seahawks and the $9 billion that that team went for, I think the more and more and more means bad news for teams like the Cincinnati Bengals. Joshua and I will discuss that in 2 minutes. Bishop and Friends on the fan.
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Bishop and Friends is sponsored by Diamond Seller, your true jeweler for almost 80 years. The Fan, Ohio's sports destination.
After putting up with Dom Tabari for a decade, the broadcast gods gave Bo these two. This is Bishop and Friends.
So I don't think this surprises anybody that the NFL makes a boatload of money, and that every time the NFL adds a new television partner or adds Netflix or gives games to Netflix, they make more and more money. It's why they want to add more games to the regular season. Like, you're going to go from 17 to 18. It's a matter of when, not if. They want to go to Japan and play a game overseas. I've often maintained that the NFL wants to just create a new day in the calendar. Like, they'll go to Congress and try to petition, add another day after between Sunday and Monday, because they just want to play another game. They want to increase their revenue. And from Sportico, the 32 NFL teams had gross revenue of more than $450 million for the 2025 season. That's up 5% from the 2024 season. And that will continue to go up every single year. And that's why so many billionaires want to get into sports, because the return on the investment's insane. Like, this group that just bought the Seattle Seahawks for $9 billion, and that was up $3 billion from the $6 billion that the Commanders sold for.
Insane.
Think of 10 years from now, that $9 billion, what that's going to be valued at.
But insane.
I think it means bad news for ownership groups like the McCaskies and the Chicago Bears, like the Brown family and the Cincinnati Bengals, of teams whose owners make the money from just that team.
Yep.
And they aren't liquid like the guy that can just cut a $3 billion check to buy the Seahawks.
I think that's one of the things in my mind that holds back so many teams from hitting their potential is the liquidity of the ownership group. And I'm almost at the point, and I know there are informal requirements for people who are looking to buy teams. So if you don't already own one, that if a majority of your net worth, for example, is tied up in real estate, it's not highly liquid, they won't let you buy. But I think that there should be a review every so often of the liquidity of current owners. And if you can't meet a certain threshold, like, you're going to have to sell a portion or all of your team so you can have some cash to be able to do things. You talk about the Bears, and I was in Chicago for 3 years, and, you know, a lot of conversation about the McCaskey family and, you know, what they were going to do as that family started to change and, you know, portions of that family unfortunately passed away. It's like, do they end up selling because the estate tax from passing the team down was almost too much for them to handle? Like, they had to get rid of a portion of that in order to be able to pay taxes. Like, that to me is an insane spot for owners to be in. So there's this idea, of course, like, all these people are billionaires and they're very wealthy people, but not all these billionaires are created the same, where some of them, and you mentioned the Seattle Seahawks, like, I think that they're going to be some tech billionaires who are like, you know what, I've got a whole bunch of shares in X, Y, and Z. I can sell those in a heartbeat, and then let me get into the sports business. And some more of the old school, we build it through real estate, we build it through owning this and owning that, that you can't just flip right away. I don't think those are the people that are built to own a sports franchise anymore.
It's a weird thing to think about, but I do wonder if you create the barrier for team or for owners. I think about the Chiefs with the Hunt family and the stadium that they just released the renderings for. Cincinnati's never going to be able to do that.
Your favorite stadium?
It looks cookie cutter, and I overreacted probably to it, where I thought, like, that's boring. But
it is boring.
It's supposed to be sterile. It's a sterile environment. This is why I always would rather do everything in a college football atmosphere.
Sure.
I even think the college football playoff, stop doing it at NFL stadiums.
It's a crime.
Crown your national champion at the Rose Bowl.
It's a crime.
Do it January 1st at the Rose Bowl. You don't have to call it the Rose Bowl. You can do it at the LA Coliseum.
Agree.
They won't, because the money. I get it. The sterile environments. And I even forgot what I was about to say because you threw me in that tangent again. You know how to push my buttons, Joshua, which is good. I just think that when the Cincinnati Bengals, when it comes time, because they had to take the name off the stadium, he took his dad's name off the stadium because they needed money.
Yes.
You can't just keep patching together their stadium. Well, no, that's why the Bears are going to Indiana.
You're at a certain point, like some of these owners, in order to keep up with the people who do have easily spendable money, like they're going to have to sell their teams for parts or portions of the organization and things that they own within the organization for parts. And I don't think that's a great way to have to operate.
And I think, well, then you're selling your team, right? Because it's going to give it to a point where you're not the majority owner anymore. Somebody else is. I think it sucks in a way. And I'm not, look, these NFL owners, they have a ton of money, all of them. Like, I don't feel bad for them. But this is, unfortunately, the way the world is going in a lot of aspects. It's happening to a lot of people where they can't afford to own homes anymore because just the way the system has gotten. And it's gotten that way out of greed, and sometimes it's gotten that way out of people trying to manipulate the system in a bad way. But it just sucks that some of these families who have owned these teams for so long are going to get driven out of doing that because they don't have the money to build Jerry World. Which once Jerry World builds Jerry World, you've got to, everybody has to keep up with that because it's boring if you just go sit in a seat and have nothing to do or a giant scoreboard to look at.
Yeah.
It sucks that it's that way now.
So I feel bad for the senior citizen in society who worked their whole life to own a home, and property taxes have gone up so much because home prices have appreciated and they feel forced out of their neighborhood, right? Like, I feel bad for that person. I am going to refuse to feel bad for somebody who is voluntarily participating in owning an NFL franchise that is worth billions of dollars, and they don't have anything else going business-wise to be liquid, and they have to sell it, and then they walk away with a multi-billion dollar check one day. You know, like, I think everything has a life cycle in that sense in terms of business, which is what these people are in. They're in business. Changing directions a little bit on this exact topic, the NFL, I don't know how recent it was, they started allowing private equity to be able to purchase a stake for this exact reason. Like, I think that they're starting to recognize that some of the ownership groups would run into this exact issue regarding liquidity. Yeah. And so they're like, you can bring in private equity for a stake in your organization and you can get your cash infusion. That to me is I think it solves a problem in the short term. I don't know if private equity has ever done well for anything, and it scares me.
I was just
bit.
About to ask the question, what's one thing where PE's come in and something's gotten better?
Yeah.
Where it's been improved upon. But that's not the goal. The goal is to make more money.
Yep.
So however that has to go, or however you have to do it, it's not as important to make the product better, to improve the experience of the people, especially with a thing like the NFL. And it's why I got so mad about the college football and the Big Ten trying to get private equity, thinking that they could put a price on the experience of being on Lane Avenue for college football Sunday, football Saturdays, thinking that they could establish a price on how we all feel, how we romanticize in our formative years, you in your playing years, for the college football experience. I was like, that's odd. It's pretty audacious.
Yeah. I mean, and to that point too, like, the NFL has done better than anybody in the world at figuring out different ways to open up revenue channels, right? But like, instead of just going straight to private equity, why don't you just tell some of your members to get a little bit more creative? You know, and I know it's a little bit easier said than done when I'm like, oh, be creative, go find the money. But like, I don't know. There are a lot of smart people working at these institutions. Otherwise, they wouldn't be working there. Like, somebody can figure out a way to get a little bit creative and figure out how to open up more money without selling a portion of a university to private equity. That, to me, like, that sentence right there sounds crazy, period.
That's an ambitious. I think Utah's doing it. I think Kentucky's doing it.
More power to them, man. You're
beholden then to them. You're not beholden anymore to your fans. You're not beholden to your boosters. You're not beholden to your students.
And we've lost the plot at that point. because the part of the enterprise of collegiate athletics was that it was always something different than professional sports. There was always a little bit of a different mission.
Are Utah and Kentucky State, they're state universities, right?
So I think,
how does that all work?
They've spun off their athletic departments into a business entity that could then be invested into.
Seems awful shady.
It feels like a crazy thing to do. I agree with you.
It goes to the conversation that we will probably keep having until we are in the dirt. The money keeps going up and the price of admission keeps rising. And
what's the tipping point, though? Like, there's got to be a bubble in this thing, right? Like, I
thought we had crossed the Rubicon.
There's no way there's not a bubble.
I think the tipping point is when people quit watching. But as we've seen, that's not going to happen anytime soon.
It's a shame.
Yeah.
It's a shame we're getting into that. It's going to be a shame. And I don't know about for the NFL, where it's because it's just such a grow business. Would it be the worst thing in the world if the Browns had to bring in capital to infuse into the organization? Because while I don't think Paycor is a dump by any stretch of the imagination, in 5 years, it's going to pale in comparison to some of the... pale in comparison to the Brook Park Dome.
Right.
Because I know Bengals fans are going to be screaming, rightfully so, at the state. They gave Jimmy Haslam the money. We chop liver here. Absolutely.
I don't want to bring up anything that might ruffle feathers here, but that is ripe for a, you did it for them. You might not be playing ball the same way with us. Kentucky's right here and they'll play ball because that's what Chicago Bears have done.
The Gary Bears.
Where Indiana was like, we'll play ball. And Illinois was like, I'm not sure about this. Like, Kentucky sitting right there. Don't want to speak out of turn, but you never know.
Lane Kiffin, you lying. That's next. Bishop and Friends.
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Common Man and Timmy are putting together a hangout at the radio station for a small amount of listeners. Pizza will be involved. Ping pong, too. Lots of inappropriate conversation. And don't forget, pin the tail on Teddy. Tell Man and Timmy why you're the perfect guest by emailing goodcleanboy@gmail.com.
Presented by Billiards Plus and sponsored by Paisano Peppers.
The event takes place Thursday, July 30th, and all email submissions must be in by July 27th. Enter today.
The Fan Guest Hotline is sponsored by Federal Elite Heating and Cooling and Bryant. Doing whatever it takes to keep you and your home comfortable. The Fan.
If you love a good pie analogy,
think of the cap as a pie. And once you take out one piece, there's less left for the next guy.
Then this is the radio show for you. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
That's a fitting rejoin. Old Mike Brown audio about the pie. And when you give large slices to people, there becomes less and less of said pie.
Sure.
It's my favorite sporting analogy. I don't know where any of you stand on it, but I love hearing Mike Brown talk to me about prices and using stuff because, again, I'm not the smartest. I'm not the brightest bulb in the box. Sharpest tool in the shed, as they say. We have a winner for the Bishop and Friends t-shirt at Pirate Octopus on Twitter. I've reached out to you. I'd like you to respond. At 9:53, we had 5 responses at 971BFS. So I tried to find who got in the earliest, and Twitter gave it to me chronologically. And loyal listener Phil was just seconds short. But you threw a hand at a high school quarterback, or at a rival quarterback in high school, and that's what somebody recognized you for earlier this week.
Unfortunately so.
So you will get Bo's shirt. Just got to get the information. So congratulations, Pirate Octopus. Apologies, Phil, and everybody else. Tried to do it as fair as humanly possible, but BreakingT.com if you want your Bishop and Friends shirt again. Type in Breaking T, then search Bishop and Friends.
The chat. Phil's in here saying voter fraud. Stop the count.
You will accept the results.
Stop the count.
You will.
Thing or not a thing?
Sponsored by Billiards Plus. Find your next grill and everything you need for the master griller. Billiards Plus on Dublin Center Drive in Dublin.
You just got to get me 1,000 Twitter responses. Just 11,000 Twitter responses. Just find them.
Just find them.
Paul Feinbaum, we did not connect with this week. He's down in Tampa for SEC Media Days. It was LSU's day with Lane Kiffin, who says he's removed all of the social media apps from his phone. Kiffin says it started as a challenge from his son, but adds he's come to enjoy disconnecting. Thing or not a thing?
Whatever, dude. Like, I listen, delete your... I had teammates that would do this. They would go on a social media cleanse before the season started. Some of them were still ass when the season started, right? So, like, I don't care about anything you do up until the point where foot meets leather, and then we'll get back to it. But Lane is a different bird. He's going to do what he does. I do not care.
What I want to know is, did Lane go on all of these said social media platforms and let everyone know he was taking a break? Like, hey guys, just want to let you know I'm going away for a while.
That's what they'd love to do.
Because that would have been fantastic. So it was his son Knox that supposedly asked him to stay off of social media. And I think the thing here, a funny thing from Greg Sankey, he's like, where's Knox? Somebody give him a hug for me. This doesn't matter at all, and who cares if it's real or not or whatever. And I'm pretty sure the LSU fans don't care either. Just go win them ball games, Lane. That's all they want. But this sure seems like a spectacle. They have, what, 30 minutes with each coach? Somebody said they were 20 minutes in and not one question had been asked yet because he was just rambling on about everything.
So we have at Big Ten Media Days, some of the coaches do a long filibuster.
That's the word for it.
They will talk and talk and talk and talk to avoid having to answer the questions on the big stage at the podium. There are others who will do a quick introduction. Glad to be here. Thanks, Petiti. These are the players that we brought. Looking forward to the season. Open it up for questions. I think Brett Bielema might even be a guy at times where he's like, straight to questions. I love it.
I appreciate that. So it'll be the case. It's been the case for the last couple of weeks at Media Days. It'll be the case next week as the Big Ten goes in Chicago, where you get some of them do a long filibuster. Like, I think Greg Sankey might have gone half an hour. He had 46 minutes, half an hour before he even took a question. And it's like, nobody's here to hear from you, dude. We just have questions that we would like to get to you for. But Lane Kiffin's also lying. Like, you're on social media, dude. I think he's got burner accounts.
Yeah, 100%.
But you, to Baker's point, like, you don't leave social media unless you tell everybody you've left social media. You truly haven't done it.
It'd be sweet if Kiffin, like, walked towards the guy and said, stand up and ask that question again for a little Brett Yormark.
On Wednesday evening, the Ohio Department of Transportation said both the east and westbound lanes of State Route 316 in Pickaway County were closed because a truck carrying pickles crashed, spilling the kosher cargo all over the roadway. ODOT shared video of the accident scene with this caption. There was quite a pickle on this. There was quite a pickle today on State Route 316 in Pickaway County. The roadway is currently closed due to a crash involving a truck hauling pickles. Thankfully, the driver wasn't injured. The pickles, however, are speared. Video shared by the agency shows the heavy damaged trailer and hundreds of containers of pickles spread across the median and the roadway. They look to be the Vlasic branded pickles, too. Thing or not a thing?
This is a thing because ODOT was hilarious for that tweet. The pickles are speared. I love that. It is a thing because this feels like something that only happens in a cartoon, which is hilarious to me. And it's also a thing because I'm hoping this does not hurt the pickle supply chain because I am a pickle consumer.
This is a thing because obviously ODOT has somebody's dad running their Twitter account with all these dad jokes going on. Good job out of ODOT leaning into this. Thankfully, nobody was harmed except for maybe a few pickles. I wonder how that cleanup goes, like what they have to do with all of that. Does it all just get destroyed? Do they just send the rest to, you know, some kind of food bank or shelter that's unopened in the glass? I'd love to know where the pickles went.
I mean, if the glass jar hasn't been damaged in any way, if the seal, if you can't pop the bubble, it's out, I'll take them.
Yeah, send them to me.
Yeah, in a heartbeat. Like, it's just pickles. But, you know, that's not... as nearly as far as produce goes. Like, I'm not worried about that giving me explosive diarrhea.
Well, you never know.
If the bubble hasn't been popped, I know where you guys are going to answer on this, the two of you, Baker and Joshua Perry, but I wanted to read this anyway. As Fox announced Tuesday, the Spain-Argentina World Cup final drew 38.9 million viewers this past Sunday. It includes a peak of 51.6. It's easily the most watched English language soccer telecast in U.S. history, according to Nielsen. Fox has their top 15 local markets for the World Cup. And because of you two, Columbus is not on that list. Kansas City, the most or the highest watched market for the World Cup, followed by Boston, Austin, San Francisco, and Dallas, rounding out the top five. Thing or not a thing?
The reason this is a thing is because I think it points to a couple of actions happening right now in society. Number one, people love a good thing to bandwagon on, right? And so they're like, oh, I'm going to be cool. I'm going to watch soccer. I'm going to be a part of the in crowd. And so I think that's a part of why so many people want to watch. Secondly, this is something you can do with community. And I think that people are craving communal places to gather and to experience things and to enjoy things with friends, new and old. And so I'm here for that.
And I'm also happy for that, JP. It wasn't for me, and it wasn't for you, but I'm happy that people are doing that, because we live in a world where people are stuck in their phones and what to watch and everything, and it seems like people don't know how to interact with each other unless there is sport, so I'm happy for that. I think I mentioned when I was in the Orlando airport last Saturday, the third place game was going on in the little establishment at the airport that we were sitting in. It seemed like everybody, for the most part, had their eyes glued to those TVs and were all about what was going on in that third place game. The game we're talking about, obviously, was the championship. I don't begrudge anyone of it. I'm happy that everybody enjoyed this. I know Kansas City was really big into it because they were hosting games. And my buddy who lives out there was saying it was crazy how everybody was into it, going places to watch it because it was there. And the soccer fans around the world that came to the United States to view their teams, that is a lot like a college football Saturday. So I understand how people got into it, especially if it was in your town.
Can the CARDS win the ACC? We'll discuss next. It's Bishop and Friends.
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Casting live from the McDaniel GM Superstore Studios, driving excellence since 1916. Chevrolet. Together, let's drive. WBNS HD1 Columbus.
Good morning, I'm Eric Reeser. The Columbus Blue Jackets and goaltender Jet Greaves have avoided arbitration. Both sides reached an agreement Thursday. 3 years, $15 million for the 25-year-old Greaves, who made 54 starts for the CBJ last season, posting a .908 save percentage. Jackets and forward Cole Sillinger await arbitration this coming Monday in Toronto. Earlier today, the Chicago Blackhawks signed Patrick Kane to a 2-year deal worth $8 million. We've got day baseball in Cleveland. Game 2 in the return of Jose Ramirez, who missed the last 5 weeks with a broken left hand. J-Ran drove in a pair of runs last night, but the Guardians fell to the Twins 10-6 in Cleveland. Both teams are back at Progressive at 140 today. As for the Reds, Cincinnati won their second straight with 5-3 over the Mariners last night in Seattle. Reds are off Thursday, but Cincinnati's in St. Louis for a weekend series Friday. This update is sponsored by BMI Federal Credit Union. Take a vacation from high interest rates with special rates on balance transfers at BMI Federal Credit Union, bmifcu.org/consolidate.
Bo could quit today and become the school drop offline coordinator. You are listening to Bishop and Friends.
Yes, you are. Eric Reeser, Joshua Perry, Ryan Baker with you until noon today. Before we get to our 20 most interesting programs, Thursdays, the Louisville Cardinals. We'll have Dalton Pence from Locked On Louisville at 11:30. Want to shout out the real MVP of today's program, Mills, the YouTube chat. She says she just bought a T-shirt.
Love that.
A Bishop and Friends shirt, which you can get right now at BreakingT.com. Just type in Bishop and Friends when you hit the website. Don't type in Morning Juice or T-Bone and Tyvis. Are you okay there?
I'm dropping stuff right now.
Are you dropping what you're doing to go on Breaking Tea and buy a Bishop
That's
and Friends
exactly
shirt?
That's exactly what I'm doing.
The best facial hair on the air. Beautiful. Can be yours, too. Just be like Mills and give us your money. Or someone gets it. We don't, but we'd love to have your support by having our faces on your body.
I mean, the station gets it right some way. So Scotty probably gets it back to us.
Here's the thing I think we should do is all the proceeds from the t-shirts go to Scotty Vegas, who goes to his alley bookie, and then he invests them for us. And then at the end of the year, we can do a pizza party or something.
A pizza party.
I don't know.
That's what Scotty does at Christmas. He gets bets for people. And
Josh
hopefully
Ryan,
they
hit. No one else to go there.
You remember the pizza parties in school?
I sure do.
You talked about wheeling in the TV. They'd wheel that bad boy in, get the little pizza, right? They were teachers out of the kindness of their own heart. Hosting a pizza party. They'll cut that thing in about 29 slices. They'll pop two bags of popcorn, put a little bit on a tissue for you, and give you a little Dixie cup full of 7-Up. Those were the days, people.
We're talking about filibustering and the job the coaches do when they talk at media days. Like, PJ Fleck will get up there with his tight shirt, and he'll go for an hour if they'd let him. Like, at some of these, maybe they have an orchestra to play off. Or the Dave Chappelle wrap it up box. At media days in the SEC, they're doing that right now in Tampa. Brett McMurphy, everyone's favorite college football reporter, has clocked the fewest and the most number of words in a coach's opening statement. Now he goes back to 2022 and says Mike Leach had 5 words at the SEC media days there when he was still coaching at Mississippi State. 5 words. By Mike Leach in 2022. In 2026 for Lane Kiffin, the new head coach at LSU, he's clocked him at 2,807 words. It's a bit of a difference. But yeah, Mike Leach was, I thought, always the best with the media.
What did Lane say?
He said he didn't get on social media because his kid challenged him.
How many words do you need?
Apparently 2,800 for Lane to talk about LSU. And it, you know, what we were discussing with Jake Diebler yesterday, right? Like, the talk's nice. The availability's nice. The being out there is great for all of these coaches. But Paul Feinbaum, who we didn't have on today, but we'll get him on next week, said for Lane, the college football playoffs, the bare minimum for this season. That's what you got to do. Like, all of this can be cute, but you cannot miss out on the playoff in year one.
Who said on the SEC studio show that it was that they had to make the national title? Oof. I think that's what one of the SEC network analysts said. And a different analyst agreed on that panel. And I think it's a unique perspective for some of them because of all of the fallout from the way that things ended at Ole Miss. And it's like, you were in the playoff. And Ole Miss ended up being literally like a couple plays away from competing in a title game. And you left to go to LSU. I think there are some people who are convinced that if that's what you walked away from, which, by the way, I don't think that's something that they could replicate every year in Ole Miss. You better find it real quick there in Baton Rouge.
I saw that Lane today threw his hat in the whining about the 9 conference games, saying that they don't have it fixed the way we pick the college football playoff teams. So if they can't get that fixed, all we're going to be doing is beating each other up. Well, not if you win. If you win, you don't have to worry about it. If you don't lose to Florida, you know, who was 4-8 last year, if you don't lose to a Mississippi State, you know, I'm just throwing, like, not all the SEC teams are great. We talked about Tennessee, they were just 8-5. That's just a middle of the road team.
Don't lose to Arkansas.
Don't even play. Tennessee doesn't even play LSU every year, as we found out this week. So what do we do?
You know, and enough of those losers in the Southeastern Conference. Let's go to the Atlantic Coast Conference,
where
our 20
losers.
Most interesting program has us heading down to Louisville.
We'll expand conferences. We'll expand the playoffs, but we'll never, ever expand our interests. Bishop and Friends present the 20 most interesting programs.
Year 4 for Jeff Brohm as head coach. I think this would be year 9 for Jeff Brohm at Louisville. He was a quarterback there. That's where he had his playing career. The Cardinals 9-4 overall last season, 4-4 in ACC play. That's good for 7th in the league. They won the Boca Raton Bowl. In 3 seasons with the Cardinals, Brohm is 28-12 overall, 16-8 in ACC play. And the one thing I think about with Brohm and a lot of these ACC schools is because Duke won it last year, didn't make the college football playoff, Miami was probably the best team.
Yes.
Anything can happen nowadays. So why not for Louisville, who I think has done a good job of procuring players out of the portal? Only three returning starters on offense. They bring in a quarterback we know very well in Lincoln Kienholz. If he can be the catalyst for them to a 10-11 win season, why not Louisville in the playoff, right?
It's a unique dark horse because I tend to agree the way that the ACC is set up. Somebody who we don't anticipate winning it or being competitive might end up being the team down there. But for Jeff Brohm, I do think he understands that place, obviously, with his background as a player there. But where they fit into the overall landscape of the sport, we talked about it at the top of the show. I don't think they ever see themselves as one of those teams that's just going to go out there year after year and get, you know, great talent right out of high school. They probably got to do a little bit extra work in the portal, but they can pitch a place where people will still see you, a place where they do value the football, a place that has produced great players in the past, and a place where the coach is going to invest in their ability to continue to develop as they're on their college path.
Yeah, and they're a team with Jeff Brohm at the helm that's gone 11-4, 9-4, 9-4. So they're not super far off, especially in that conference. And Reese, you mentioned what they've done in the transfer portal this year. They were 13th, I believe, in transfer portal rankings. They brought in a lot of guys. This offense, if they brought in the right guys at the offensive line position, and Lincoln Kienholz, and we know Lincoln Kienholz is a talented quarterback. If Lincoln Kienholz can be the guy that some people think he could be, this could be a really dangerous offense because they have three running backs that are all really good. I think it's Isaac Brown rushed for almost 900 yards last year. I believe it is Kawan Brown, who is his backup, who rushed for almost 800 yards this year. And then they brought in a good kid out of the transfer portal and Marquise Davis too. So they've got some running backs there. The receivers they brought in from the transfer portal are pretty good too. Had good years at Vanderbilt and Florida State. So this LSU offense has some potential if Lincoln Kienholz can be the guy.
Now week one, they're thrown into it. You got a September 6th date. That's on a Sunday at 7:30. They're playing Ole Miss in Nashville. So you get the earliest tests humanly possible. Is I think somebody did like 100 simulations in the new EA Sports college football game, and Ole Miss came out winning a couple national titles in those simulations.
Well, good for them.
So, they're not nothing, and so that's going to be a good test. They've got SMU on the slate. They've got Florida State on the schedule. North Carolina, Pittsburgh later on. They end the season playing at Kentucky. So when I say 10-11 wins, it's ambitious, this schedule. For a team like Louisville, you can see some spots where they might trip up.
Yeah, you certainly can. But Jeff Brohm has been a guy who's pulled off upsets as a head coach. It was one thing that he did at Purdue very well. And he did it last year. Like, we were talking about Miami's best team in the ACC a year ago. Well, Louisville beat him last year. So, you know, he has this giant killer thing in him to where maybe in some of those games he can pull off an upset.
Their two toughest games, Reese, might be in the first 3 weeks.
Yeah, I think once they clear September.
Ole Miss, Villanova, then SMU. That first week and third week, that might be the two toughest games on their schedule. Now, Kentucky's a rivalry game. Georgia Tech, I still think, is a decent football team. Pitt's probably a decent football team, but not world beaters, so if they can get over this hump early, they might be able to cruise a little bit at the end.
We'll have some Cardinal conversation with Dalton Pence, the Locked On Louisville podcast host, will join us at 11:30. But we will do the categories in the Louisville Cardinals coming up next. Bishop and Friends.
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
In the old days when people lived to be 40, you only had one option for listening to your favorite show.
But now, ooh, baby, radio, podcast, the Fan app, and YouTube, ooh, just to name a few, live or on demand.
You have no excuses. The Fan.
Fan weather.
From the Logan AC and Heat Services Weather Center.
Good deal of sunshine continues for the rest of the day. Comfortable out there with low humidity. Highs reach the upper 70s. Some passing high clouds develop tonight. Another coolish night with lows in the upper 50s. For your Friday, partly sunny, just a touch warmer, but still not bad. Lower 80s for your Friday. For The Fan, I'm 10 Weather Impact meteorologist Justin Gertz.
Miss a little, miss a lot. Catch Bishop and Friends wherever you get your podcasts. It's free.
Sponsored by Atlas Butler Heating, Cooling, and Plumbing.
The Fan. They'll offer betting advice, but don't bet on it being good. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
Our 20 most interesting program series heads to Louisville for the Louisville Cardinals and the ACC contender. And we'll have Dalton Pence on Locked On Louisville coming up here in about 12 minutes. But fight, U of L, fight. Is the Cardinals fight song. And I think if you had had me listen to this before today, I'd have been like, I don't know who that is. Because I can't tell you a single time playing the EA Sports college football game, I was the Louisville Cardinal.
Well, I think that's kind of fair.
Back when I was playing the game, you know, I was playing in the Big East. Like, I was Pitt. But...
So you could whoop up on Notre Dame?
Well, that was part of the fun, right? But I also, you know, had a guy, Larry Fitzgerald, was fun to play as.
Oh, yeah, he's pretty good.
I just like playing as the obscure... Even as, like, the obscure schools that I would play as, Stanford, Pitt... I think I did an Oklahoma State a couple times. I never gravitated to Louisville. But that is the topic for today. And the Louisville Cardinals College Football 2026 adaptability grade is, Joshua?
I'm curious to see what the answers are as we go around the circle here. I feel like this program is interesting because some of this is a little bit harder to pin down. Feels like a C. Right, like I don't think that they are well constructed in every portion of their program to compete. But I do feel like there are some upsides. As I mentioned, I think they do fine in the portal. Money's probably not the greatest, but I don't think they're the worst in terms of their ability to compete from that standpoint. You like where they're at in terms of their path to the playoff through the ACC, and I think that's always a positive. So I would say somewhere in the middle of the road.
It's funny, I was thinking C as well. They seem to have done a good job this year in the portal, especially of getting guys that have the talent to go to bigger schools, but may not be starters at those schools, like Lincoln Keenhole's coming in, Trey Robinson, the receiver from Vanderbilt, the receiver from Florida State as well coming in. So it seems like they're trying to find that... maybe untapped potential from the bigger schools, but I'm not sure they have the money to go all in after the big guys because they're putting their money into basketball first. It is a basketball school at Louisville. So I think they're trying, but I think it's just about a C.
So it's actually good that this song, the Fight U of L, is where it is. The first time I was kind of introduced to Louisville was 07. Obviously, you watched them on TV in the heyday of the Big East. But in their song, they spell cards. They go C-A-R-D-S. And I was at that Lexington Regional that Ohio State beat Xavier in back in 07. Louisville was there, too. Rick Pitino and Louisville was the next game. I think they played Texas A&M. And it was at Rupp Arena. And Rick Pitino walks into Rupp in a white suit. And it's like Satan walked into church. But the Louisville fans were singing the C-A-R-D-S. And they, like, spell it with their hands. And so this is C-A-R is how they do that. D and then S. And I always thought that was weird because that doesn't look like an R.
It does. Kind but of. But it's.
Oh,
we
this
shouldn't
is a C.
try to spell this is a an C. R
this
with
is
our
a,
body.
This is a C for Louisville.
Yeah. Yeah.
Uniform brand grade for the Cardinals.
Probably somewhere similar. I think their uniforms are fun. They don't make you feel emotion toward the sport, and I think that's a big part of it. So once again, not awful. I would say somewhere in the middle of the road there for the brand. Once again, like, I don't know, it's kind of cool, it's fine, it's certainly not in the upper echelon, so I'm probably around a C for all of this as well.
I'm gonna go a little higher here. I'm gonna go a B minus. I think the one thing with the uniform is they've changed it so much over the years, so you don't have that attachment with it. Obviously, the Cardinal is there on the hat, but they've changed it so much. And they do have a brand, I believe. Unfortunately, that brand is just mostly for basketball.
Right.
So I will give them a B minus here because B minus.
Historical player you'd pick for this Louisville team.
This was a little bit of a toughie because I think you could have gone in multiple places with some of the roster turnover, like the transfer guys you expect to be able to come in and play. So I went with guys who were tried and true. Elvis Dumervil, Marcus Smith were both guys who were edge rushers that played at Louisville that could get you 15 to 20 sacks in a season. I think you just drop one of those guys in there.
So I love Lincoln Gienholz, but I think it'd be I think it'd be hard every year for Louisville not to want to drop Lamar Jackson in there at quarterback and let him go. And Lamar Jackson, with these running backs, it would almost be impossible to stop the running game, at least, of this Louisville team.
Yeah, Lamar was out of his mind as a quarterback there, so he'd be it for me. Would they get an official visit from Vince Howard?
As a transfer, if he was in the portal.
As a second chance.
So I'm going to go D here for the grade because I don't think they would get that visit.
Not out of high school, no. Coach grade for Jeff Brohm.
I'm saying a solid B. I actually think that he's one of the most underrated coaches in college football. He is Kirk Ferentz in a lot of ways from the standpoint of can punch above their weight at times. I think Kirk is more consistent in beating teams they're supposed to beat. But they make do with what they have really well. And they're opposite in the fact that Iowa's always got defense. Jeff Brohm's offenses are always going to be able to score points. It's just something that he does really well with. But the idea that he's been able to pull off some monster upsets, and he's done it pretty consistently to me, like, he is a phenomenal ball coach. It's just inconsistent defense at times and the fact that they will go out and lose a game they should absolutely win.
So I'm going to go B here as well, but for Louisville, this might be an A because he's an alum. He's 28 and 12 there. We mentioned 11-4, 9-4, 9-4. I don't know if Louisville has that much more to give on a consistent basis, at least. So it's a B overall for Brohm, but this might be an A for Louisville.
Did we say Will Stein, Kentucky's head coach? Did he play at Louisville as well?
Let me hit a quick Google.
Because that would be that. I mean, that it's just another fascinating wrinkle into what is the final game of the season.
He was a quarterback for Louisville Cardinals.
The Wildcats and the Cardinals when they meet in Lexington. It's a B. But you had mentioned something, Joshua, that I think is really, really endearing about a coach is if they are familiar with upsets, if they're familiar with taking down Goliath, then you can kind of show that you can be a little chesty with your guys and not fear when Goliath comes to town or when you go to Goliath.
Yeah.
Like upsets are what we love about college football, I'd think, more than anything. And that'll take me to the sliding door moment of all time. But Joshua, what's it for you?
So I think it's hard to avoid what Petrino was able to do there.
Yeah.
And then how he left. He basically committed to like a 10-year contract. And 6 months later, he was like, oh, the NFL wants me. So I'm going to do that. But I'm only going to coach 13 games with the Falcons before I'm out of there. There were a lot of years that were down. And I think it was maybe it was John L. Smith and then Petrino who were both like bright spots in that history. And I feel like if they were able to have maybe a better pass off from that era to the next, it would be a little bit more of a solid program.
So it's funny. I was thinking the John L. Smith hiring as well, because John L. Smith into Bobby Petrino and then Steve Kragthorpe wasn't the greatest after Petrino, but they have been pretty much since that hiring a consistent 500 or better football team. So it seemed like John L. Smith kind of got it going. Bobby Petrino took it to another level, maybe a slight dip, but then they got Charlie Strong and they got through some things. So they've been a 500 or better. So I think that John L. Smith hiring has kind of solidified this football program.
So in Petrino's last season in Louisville, he's probably gone after that 06 year, regardless of what happens. But November 9th in Piscataway, New Jersey, the 14th ranked Rutgers Scarlet Knights upset the third ranked Louisville Cardinals 28-25 on primetime television.
They thought they were going to be playing for a national title that year.
Had they run the table, who's to say they might not have? Because Florida also had a loss on their schedule that season. And for Louisville, Rutgers misses the first kick. But Louisville's offsides. And then they drill the other kick, and it's a stadium storming in Piscataway, in the birthplace of college football, one of the biggest upsets of, I think, the 2000s, that decade.
They're firing the cannons in Piscataway.
Incredible sliding door moment there. For this team in 2026, the Louisville Cardinal, win it all, make playoff, too soon, flame out.
I'd say probably it's a too sooner, but they're a dark horse. Like, we've discussed it.
Yep.
The schedule sets up for them. They have been able to pull off upsets. Right, like, this is a team where if you're looking for one to maybe throw a couple of bucks down on a futures for make the playoff, like, there's probably great value there, and it's not out of the realm of possibility that they can pull it off.
Yeah, I think it's too soon. Give Brohm another 10-11 win season and Keenholz a full year of starting and then another year. Maybe next year they could fight for that playoff.
We will go down to Louisville and talk with Dalton Pence. He's the Locked On Louisville podcast host. In 2 minutes, it's Bishop and Friends on the...
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Bishop and Friends is sponsored by Diamond Seller, your true jeweler for almost 80 years. The Fan, Ohio's sports destination.
We'll read your emails on the air,
but we won't tell you where to send them.
Hey, we're not doing all the work for you.
This is Bishop and Friends.
Eric Reeser, Joshua Perry, Ryan Baker with you on a Thursday. The Louisville Cardinal, our 20 most interesting programs programmed today. We got out of the Bryant Heating and Cooling Systems fan guest hotline to have a Cardinal conversation with Dalton Pence. He's the host of the Locked On Louisville podcast. And Dalton, thanks so much for the time this morning. And for no real reason at all, I was thinking about sponsored jersey patches yesterday and this morning and how teams all over college football are looking to find money any place that they can. How's Louisville doing in this era with name, image, and likeness, with getting players the proper payout from the portal?
Yeah, no, first off, appreciate you all having me onto the show. It means a lot. It's interesting because, you know, Louisville's not one of those schools that has the seemingly unlimited pool of money like some of the other programs you see out there in Texas and in the SEC across the country. But it seemed like the Cardinals were pretty innovative early on in the early days of NIL, and it gave them a little bit of a competitive advantage. And now you're starting to see schools kind of level the playing field and gain more of an advantage on the Cardinals because, like I mentioned, they've got a good amount of money, but it's not in that top tier. And they're one of the few schools that prioritizes basketball just as much as they do football. So it's a pretty interesting dynamic that I think they're navigating the waters just like everyone else is.
So you mentioned their creativity and being able to go out and get players. It seems like they had a pretty good transfer haul this year. How are those guys all acclimating, and who are the names to really look out for?
Yeah, from what I'm hearing, you know, throughout spring ball, the additions that they made were living up to the expectation. And I mean, as you know, it all starts with the quarterback, and it starts with a quarterback that you all are likely familiar with Lincoln Keenholz, who, you know, a lot of the success is depending on how good he is. You've got him. You've got Trey Richardson, the wide receiver from Vanderbilt, who's one of the most explosive players in the country at that position. You've got guys like Tyler Thompson and Cohen Entringer on the defensive side of the ball. But you know, with Jeff Brohm, every single offseason, most of your budget is being spent on the portal. That's how Louisville does it. They spend a good portion of their budget on the portal and supplement with high school recruiting.
You mentioned Jeff Brohm, Louisville alum, back. This is going to be his fourth season, 28-12 so far on the job. How do the fans view everything that Jeff Brohm has done so far? Are they happy?
Yeah, I would say, you know, the vast majority are happy. Look, we live in a society where it's not what have you done for me, it's what have you done for me lately, right? So kind of a rough go in 2025. You went into November with everything to play for, and you lost a couple games that you definitely should have won. So the positive is that the floor has been super high. You've won 9-plus games in each of Brohm's 3 seasons. Unfortunately, the drawback has been that you've played meaningful football with seemingly your destiny and your fate in your own hands in November, and you've come up short and not been able to make that first college football playoff appearance. So I think it's not black and white. It's understanding that you're in very good hands with Jeff Brohm. It definitely could be much worse. The issue is that the ceiling is in question. And for Brohm to really reach those new heights here in the Ville, you've got to be able to kind of check that box off and get to the 12-team college football playoff at some point in the near future.
Dalton Pence joins us, courtesy of the Bryant Heating and Cooling Systems Fan Guest Hotline. Dalton is the host of the Locked On Louisville podcast. Dalton, when you talk with Louisville fans or when you interact with them on social media, you know, game one of the season, September 6th against Ole Miss, what's the temperature of the fan base in regards to, you know, is a win in, was it Nashville is where that game's being played? Like, is that the expectation? Like, go in and beat that SEC team.
Yeah, I mean, one thing about Jeff Brohm is, yes, his teams do unfortunately tend to lose to teams that they're not supposed to, but in return, playing an underdog Jeff Brohm-led team, it's pretty dangerous. I mean, you saw what he did at Purdue and the upsets that he pulled off there, and Louisville in each of the past three seasons, they've beaten a team that they're not supposed to. Notre Dame was a top 10 team in 23. They beat Clemson on the road in 24 and then 25. Everyone remembers their upset win at Miami against the top three squad. So I'm not going to go as far as saying, like, if you lose this game, everyone's just going to kind of be panicking. But I think that there's a quiet optimism because Louisville fans know by now that Jeff Brohm's teams in these key games, they tend to get up for it. And they're usually matching whatever intensity the other team is playing with. But, yeah, I mean, everyone has the high expectations of this is a roster with Isaac Brown coming back and Clev Lubin coming back that you have a legitimate chance with the schedule to make the playoff. But your schedule's not that great, so a win over Ole Miss would be huge.
So you mentioned kind of that dark horse thought process. The schedule lines up, and this is going to be a team that I think people underestimate regardless, but what would need to go right this season for them to actually make it to the college football playoff?
Yeah, no, that's a really good question. Look, I'm not naive to suggest otherwise. The way that this new, it's really been going like this for a while, but this new era of college football where it's the SEC and the Big Ten and kind of everyone else, or at least in the eyes of the committee, you have to be better than SEC schools and Big Ten schools to get in if you're an ACC team. I mean, you just saw Miami last year be the last team added to the field despite going 10-2 and their losses being to a pretty solid Louisville and SMU team. That's a team that also beat Notre Dame and had some solid wins and some very, very good players. But I think that the most likely and the easiest way to get to the 12-team playoff is to just win the ACC. The CFP's put into effect to where you've got your five conference champions, but they're coming from the Power Four, and then you have one group of six, so it's no longer the highest-ranked conference champion, so the ACC is going to get a spot in, and that's the easiest way. It's the cleanest way, because when you start talking about at-large bids, it gets super messy if you're an ACC team, because you have to do more. You got to go above and beyond, because you know that the committee is going to do everything in their power to put a team in from the SEC or the Big Ten over you. And it's not, you know, complaining. It's just kind of the way things are. And you have to be honest with yourself about the struggles you're going to face if you're, you know, relying on an at-large bid to make those dreams come true.
Miller Moss, the transfer from USC, had been the quarterback there, and we know he could sling the ball around a little bit. Lincoln Keenholz is a guy that, a little more of an athlete. He can throw it, but he can also run it a lot. And I know the running back room is a strength of this Louisville team. What kind of offense do you think we're going to see this year from the Cardinals?
Yeah, I think last year the offense was held back by lackluster quarterback play. I thought at times Miller looked really solid, but other times just, for whatever reason, didn't really meet expectations, and it kind of hurt the offense overall. Of course, running backs have to stay healthy, but you're going to see an offense that, I mean, it's a true pro-style offense. You're going to run the football. Isaac Brown, Kewon Brown is that two-headed monster in the backfield. You've got Lincoln Kienholz, who brings a different element than Brohm's offenses have had in the past with his ability to extend plays with his legs. Really interested to see what that looks like in this offense, but you don't go out and prioritize the weapons that you did via the portal if you don't have the expectations to throw the ball across the field. And I think that Trey Richardson is going to be one of the best receivers in the conference and one of the fastest in the entire country. So it's going to be an offense that spreads the target share and everyone's going to eat, but it's going to be one that's pretty unpredictable because this is probably the year with the most weapons that Brohm has had, honestly, in his entire coaching career.
Yeah, Dalton, it'll be a fascinating ACC this season. You talk with what the portal work done by Brohm in Louisville, James Franklin of Virginia Tech, Miami, even, you know, Duke won the conference last year, like you had mentioned.
Yeah.
For the ACC, what do you think? Because last week with comments from Commissioner Jim Phillips, have you're wondering, are they still going to have this kind of strength in 5 years? Like, what do you see from the ACC 5 years from now?
You know, that's the million-dollar question, or probably multi-million-dollar question. I have been an advocate for Louisville to try to be proactive and look into potentially moving to the Big 12 or doing whatever they can to get an entrance into one of those top two programs, or I'm sorry, conferences. But there's a lot of moving parts, and I'm not overly confident that the ACC is being proactive in that realm, but I don't think they're doing a terrible job. They just have to stay proactive. That's what I'll continue to, you know, reiterate time and time again, because the decisions being made across the national landscape are in the favor of the Big Ten and the SEC. Again, no sour grapes. It's just the way it is. And the way that you have to survive is by being proactive. And I'm hoping that the ACC can understand that I think expansion is in the cards for them, no pun intended. And if they don't show the ability to take that step forward, or if they lose some partners like Clemson, Florida State, Miami, I hope the Cardinals are proactive rather than reactive. But for the time being, I mean, ACC made more money last year than they ever have. So I suppose a good step in the right direction.
Get the Locked On Louisville podcast wherever it is you do your podcasting. He is the host, Dalton Pence, joining us on the Bryant Heating and Cooling Systems Fan Guest Hotline. Dalton, thanks so much for the time. Appreciate the conversation. Enjoy the weekend.
Of course. Thank you all for having me.
You know, Louisville's in such the spot. It's such an interesting spot, like so many other teams in the country, where you got to cobble together the NIL, you got to cobble together guys out of the transfer portal. But, you know, I think back to Purdue in 2018.
Yeah.
And say, okay, that could be a giant killer.
Yeah.
Jeff Brohm is your head coach with guys who maybe felt overlooked, guys that have maybe, you know, dude, felt passed up.
I know it was the Big Ten West, but they played for a Big Ten championship, right? Like, mm-hmm. this at Purdue, Jeff Brohm did that. Like, it's not too crazy for me to think that they could have the right ingredients to be playing for a conference championship in the ACC.
We'll do three things on a Thursday next. Bishop and Friends.
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Fan have never been larger. T-Bone is large. Tybus is getting large. Get large with them. T-Bone and Tybus.
Weekday mornings from 6 to 9.
Your home for large people and larger personalities. The Fan. All your favorite fan shows are available when you want them.
Head to 971thefan.com and hit that subscribe button.
The Fan, Ohio sports destination. Find us on YouTube. Search WBNS Radio and you can see what Bo looks like. But only if you subscribe. This is Bishop and Friends.
Daily Fan Poll sponsored by JT's Pizza and Pub. It asks, do you still care about high school recruiting in the transfer portal era? Just north of 100 votes at 971 The Fan on Twitter. It's 50-50.
I never really cared.
Same.
So I can't care any less than I already cared.
I understand and recognize its importance. I feel that it's the most undesirable part, I think, of the job.
Mm-hmm.
These coaches have to do is go in and try to recruit high schoolers and their parents and sometimes the third uncles. And I thought that 10 years ago. And I think it so now, where you've got to go and appease. And I don't, this isn't sour grapes with David Gabriel George, but to go in and have him tell you, all right, I'm going to need $1 million, yeah. $2 million a year.
Yep.
You're going to need to transport my family yep. to and from away games. I'm going to need them to come to my announcement.
Yep.
And
I need the number zero.
I need the number zero.
And I need to start. Guaranteed. It's tough.
Also,
and this is why I love teachers and I give them a ton of credit. Mm-hmm. You ever had a conversation with a 15-year-old, 16-year-old, 17-year-old? You ever done that? You know how hard it is to talk to them? Like, meet them where they're at?
Mm-hmm.
Skill.
A lot of bros in there.
I mean, bruh. Come on, bruh.
So it's important. I recognize, we recognize it. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that if Ohio State is seventh, I think, right now in the 24/7 composite, if they get number one, I'm going to do backflips. If they are 10th, I'm going to say it, panic. You know, if guys, you miss out on David Gabriel George, that stinks, but it doesn't mean Ohio State's going to stink.
So there are people who will click on that fan poll and say that they really don't care about high school recruiting, that will flip out if the recruiting class doesn't look the way that they want it to look. And
yeah.
I just got to tell you, like, if you're saying that you're not going to be bothered, then you just don't be bothered at the end of it either.
And to David Gabriel George, I hope it works out. I hope he's successful. Yeah. I hope he doesn't have to transfer. I hope everything works out for everybody.
If you feel like your market is $2 million and that's what you should command, and you go out there and you ask for it and somebody says, we'll give it to you, you played the game and you played it well, right? I'm not going to be mad at you for that. I just think my perspective on what the priorities need to be could be different. But once again, you start throwing all that stuff in there, it's hard when you're young to say no.
It's very different. And, you know, and I think to you, and I think to Tyvus a lot when you guys were coming out of high school and just what your requests were, if any, to Ohio State.
Yeah. My request is a spot on the roster, period. And we'll figure the rest out from there.
Time for three things.
One, two, three things.
Sponsored by Newman Roofing. For all your roofing, gutter, or siding needs, call Newman Roofing today at 614-NEW-ROOF or visit online at newmanroofing.com.
First thing for me, I want to give thanks to Dalton Pence, Locked On Louisville, and all of our other guests this week for coming on for our 20 Most Interesting Program series. We're going to pop out of the ACC tomorrow and do Michigan State. The Spartans in year one under Pat Fitzgerald. SMU's the other ACC school on the slate. But we've got to have Bo in to talk about his beloved ponies. So when Bo returns from Montana on Monday, SMU will be the program in our 20 Most Interesting.
Yeah, shout out to Dalton and all the other people. And I kind of mentioned it earlier in the show, but if you're looking for news and you're looking for notes and you're looking for updates, these are the types of people that you need to follow. My first thing, so a little bit of inside radio here. When you come in, you plug in your headphones and you flip it on and you can hear all the stuff. And the thing that I've noticed is either my hearing has gotten really bad or Tyvus has elite hearing, because I have to bump up the headphones so much when I put them on. Like, I mean, it's like a whisper when Tyvus is doing the show, and I think that's pretty amazing.
Or maybe he's just playing a trick on you and turning it down.
I don't think Tyvus is thinking at that level.
Not yet.
So first thing for me, and I don't know if this is bad on me or I'm just too trusting or I don't pay attention, but I took my cats in yesterday to get them fixed. Well, I got a little surprised when I took them in to get them fixed because I was told that I had one boy cat and one girl cat. I have two girl cats, and I was just told that. I never looked. I never paid attention. There's dark hair down there. I'm not looking in that area anyway, so... Unfortunately, now I have, instead of Cece and Bobbert, not unfortunately, I have Cece and Bobberta, I guess. So.
I love that.
It's a good job out of you, though.
I didn't pay attention at all. I wasn't looking. No reason to look down there.
Over the last week, I've seen a lot of Tom Brady. He factors to be involved with everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I know I was maybe critical last week of the Fanatics Fest, where he's throwing a football to Gronk and who gets dunked into a Raising Cane's or a vat of Raising Cane sauce, and how everything's now just hyper commercialized. But with the Tom Brady movement towards the WWE, I do think he's great as a heel. Like, he would be a guy that people would boo. he can come off as the greatest athlete of all time and be super arrogant and it not be too much of a character. It can just be Tom. And he's been that forever. Leaning into it, I think, again, from a strictly hardcore ballet like wrestling is, makes the most sense in the world to have this guy come on and be smug. Logan Paul, I don't know if it's the folly, because you can't have two of the same person.
Right, right. I could see it because I'm just tired of seeing him, so he'd be a great heel because I want him off my teeth.
See, and you, or you want him to get punched in the face.
Yes, absolutely. All right, so my second thing, a little James story for you. We're sitting on the couch yesterday. We're having a nice little back and forth, and I'm joking with him, and I'm saying some things that he doesn't necessarily agree with. So he looks me dead in the face, puts his paw right over my mouth, and says, "Relax, Daddy, relax. Just relax." And it was the funniest thing that he's done.
R-E-L-A.
He was just, "Relax, relax. Daddy, relax."
At least he's calling you daddy again.
Yeah, I know.
Not Joshua. Yeah. If he'd have said, "Relax, Joshua," small I might have lost
it. If he would
have
said,
here.
"Relax, Joshua," he'd have been on the street.
The second thing for me, it has been amazing sleeping the last two nights with the windows open. This weather is what I'm talking about. And I can't, everybody's like, "Oh my gosh, it's so chilly." If this was March, you'd be like, "Oh, it's so warm outside. I love this. Give me more of this."
This is preferable, waking up and having it fall-like weather. John Gruden is going to be calling an NFL preseason game. He's going to be joined by Rondae Barber for the game between the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and the Kansas City Chiefs in Tampa on August 22nd. Reminder, Gruden's still in an active lawsuit against the NFL, but I think it's, again, a good job out of the NFL in realizing this will drive people to a preseason game and sticking, you know, not trying to mix business with the personal side of things.
He's popular and he's knows football, so it makes a lot of sense. All right, my final thing is another one pertaining to James. On my way home, my wife is like, "You need to pick your boy up because he's getting on my nerves. Take him over to your parents' house, hang out there." I pull up to the house. She's standing on the porch. He's standing in the driveway with the backpack on. Like, she was that tired of him. He's just standing there waiting for me to pull up. Once again, hilarious.
Oh, James is the best.
He is.
He is the absolute best. Don't go anywhere. Your Thursday afternoon is taken care of with Rothman and Ice. Adam King in for Matty Ice. They'll do some Browns talk with Jake Burns at 12:30, and it is a Gold Jacket Thursday with Dave Casper.
We'll have more James stories, the Michigan State Spartans on 20 Most Interesting. Myself, Joshua Reinbaker, back tomorrow, 9 to noon, Bishop and Friends, right here on the...
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FIRST.